Please be seated. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
We have quite a hit parade this morning. The first item up is Rule Petition 1605, and I'm going to go through the list of people I have as speakers, and if I miss somebody, let me know, okay? Attorney Rothstein is going to be the presenter. He's going to start out. Then Judge Abrahamian, Attorney Brenner, Attorney Weber, very good. Judge Fitzpatrick, Mr. Crowley, very good. Attorney Deisinger, Attorney Roberts, or Secretary Roberts, Attorney Brotherhood, Attorney Nichols. What I have
Murphy.
Is
Murphy.
Murphy. Judge Murphy's.
Okay, because what I have here, right.
Eight was
okay.
Brotherhood.
I'm sorry. Okay, yeah. Okay, very good. Okay. So Attorney Murphy is here, and Judge Morrison is here. Is there anybody else whose name I haven't read or mangled that wants to speak on this?
The State Bar President, Fran Deisinger, is here, and he should have been on the list.
Yeah, I did read his name on the list. I can see Fran sitting right there, so he's good to go. Anybody else that wants to chime in? All right, very good. Well, Attorney Rothstein, if you will lead us off, please.
Thank you. May it please the Court. I'm very honored and humbled to be here. It's be my 38th year anniversary of being in this Court first sworn in. I'm quite grateful to be back here. I'm here today on behalf of a committee to create in this state a new docket, a docket for the Circuit Court to dedicate its specialization to business or commercial cases, much like we have specialized cases for felonies, misdemeanors, family, juvenile, etc. This would be one more docket that would be occupied by a Circuit Court judge. The Chief Justice has read the various speakers who will be here today. Some of them are members of the committee. Others are representatives of the State Bar. Others are representative of commerce or industry here. I think I should give you just a little bit of history on the commercial courts in the United States. I do that because we are not the first court to do this. We are not the cutting edge, but I salute the court's leadership on this because I think it's an important development for it. This goes back more than 23 years to the ABA. The ABA studied the issue of congestion in the courts, difficulties that the courts were having, and the new complicated business cases that were coming in front of them. It was resulting in a slowdown in the business cases, as well as the consequent effects on other dockets within the court system. So the ABA came out.
Mr. Rothstein, if I may.
Yes.
First of all, good morning.
Thank you, Justice Gibbons.
And you and I have not met, but I understand that you took a leadership role in the committee that helped prepare and plan and lay the foundation for the proposal for the business courts.
That's true.
And as a supporter of the business courts, I made the motion the court adopt the rule. And I want to thank you for all of your hard work on this and your effective work. I understand you operated under a pretty short timeline, but you pulled it together. And from what I've heard anyway, the fact that it was pulled together and pulled together in what I saw as a very solid, with a very solid foundation, was in no small part due to your efforts and your skill. So thank you. But now, believe it or not, that's not my question.
I appreciate that.
You said a few minutes ago that Wisconsin is not on the cutting edge of this, and you were about to go through the historical perspective.
Yes.
But I'm curious to know say, the surrounding states, for example, the states that surround Wisconsin.
Surely.
Do you know what the status of their court system is vis-a-vis business courts?
I do. I'll start with Minnesota, our state to the west. In 2011, it commissioned a task force to look into this question, and it has since created a business court, actually a complex case court, which is the counterpart or another name for a business court. Iowa in 2013, this is very important because Iowa's about half the size of our state, about half population, half GDP of us. In 2013, after a study, it task force recommended a three-year pilot, and that's important, a pilot plan. That pilot plan in Iowa concluded in 2016, June of 2016. And they went through, it's a business court with assigned judges to it. At the conclusion of that, they then took a poll or survey of their practitioners in the entire state. And I am pleased to say to you today, they are asked two questions. One, should the Iowa business court be made a permanent feature in Iowa? 96% of practitioners in the state of Iowa said yes. The second question they were asked, if you
that
have another business case.
100% answered, counsel?
Say again.
100% answered that?
That I don't know. I just know the statistic, Justice.
Okay. Of those that answered, 90%.
Those that answered, and then 92% answered the question, or answered positive to the question, would you take your case to the business court? 92% said yes. I do know this as a fact. The state of Iowa then made permanent its business court. It's now a permanent feature. Illinois has had a business court for many years. Indiana, 2015.
Counsel, can I just question? Hi.
Yes.
One, I join Justice Gableman in saying thank you for your efforts. Two, you really have a very good position to be in since the court has already adopted this. So that's not the usual position that people come to the hearing with. So you would be congratulated of having succeeded without presenting anything but your petition. So that's good. As to Iowa, if I read this correctly, they and you're saying about they have about half our size, right?
Yes. They're about, I believe, we're 5.7 and they're 3.1 million people.
Well, and how many cases did they have? According to my reading of these charts, 31.
In the business court?
Yeah.
Yes. There's a difference in their court that they have. Each state has its own particular
sure.
flavor.
But, I mean, that's 31. So how many do you expect in this state?
Well, I would hope, since we're double the size, that we would get more than double. And I believe that Iowa is more of an agricultural-based society where we
that's
have a lot
big
more
business.
Industry.
Agriculture is a big business.
Of course it is. But I believe that business commerce has more opportunity and more exposure to the sorts
but,
of cases.
But we don't know how many cases. I mean, you only have one letter that, as I read it, that is raises questions about the
yes.
court. And that's Judge Stark's letter.
Yes.
And Judge Stark's position is part of it is because of her training. She says, show me the evidence. What is the evidence of how many cases we're talking about? Tell me the evidence of what the problem is with the number of cases we're having. And two, how does this resolve that? Right. I mean, that's a summary of her.
That's a summary of Judge Stark's letter, yes.
Right. So I'm sort of trying to figure out some responses to that.
I think you can offer two things. One,
because, you know, I did not vote to adopt this until I heard why, what's the purpose, what's the expectation, and then
surely.
What's the cure, and sometimes the cure is worse than the disease. So those are things I like to know, and I thought Judge Stark hit it on the head, which said, let's talk about it.
I can offer the court this. I've done a lot of products liability work dealing with science.
Now, products liability wouldn't come under this.
No, it wouldn't. But what I wanted to say is that the cutting edge of, if you want data and facts, is called meta-analyses. What's that? That's taking existing experiments, existing surveys, looking at them, combining them, not redoing them, but you get the advantage of broader data, broader information. That's exactly what our committee did. What did we do in a meta-analysis? We looked at over 26 states' experiments, successful experiments with business courts, and I would submit to you that is data. And we also recognize that this is new to Wisconsin, so we recommended a pilot court precisely to get the information so it can be tailored not only to big counties but small counties. I think it's a wonderful development. I think it's well justified by the facts.
How did you pick Waukesha and the 8th District?
That's a very good question.
You know, Mr. Rothstein, I appreciate Justice Abrahamson's questions, but you were in the process of answering my question about the surrounding states, and I would appreciate the courtesy from other members of the bench that we show each other the courtesy of allowing the witness to continue to respond until he is done with my question. Justice Abrahamson is not shy about insisting on answers to her questions, which is her right, and now I assert my right.
So very good.
I accept that. Thank you.
So we have two not shy people on this court.
Yeah. We were on. We have Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois has had a commercial court for decades. It's a leader.
How many cases?
Indiana,
you know, would you just let him answer the question?
Yeah, just let him finish, right.
Indiana has now adopted also a pilot plan for a business court. In Michigan, our last surrounding states, we are now the donut hole among the donuts among our competitors without one. Michigan has a commercial court by statute now. So we are all the surrounding commercial states, both larger and smaller, Illinois being bigger, Iowa being smaller, of all different sizes, shapes, but our competitors in the business world all have business courts, and that's why I'm excited to have our business environment to have the same advantages of specialization. And that's important. This is not a favored court any more than a felony docket favors felons. No. This is an idea. This is an idea of providing specialization to make it efficient, economical, and beneficial, not only for the business court, but you have to think about this. Those on the bench know this best. If you have a complicated case in a general civil court, that tends to eat up a lot of time. Who suffers? It's all the rest of the cases suffer. By specializing, that's why we have felony courts, that's why we have misdemeanor courts, because it's a more efficient allocation of resources, and it's better justice. It's better justice. And that's why I believe that these are business-on-business cases. These are not products liability, personal injury, et cetera. Those do not go to the business court. This is to help business, to help improve our business environment.
And I can see why you've been a successful attorney by bringing up the specter of donuts. You are appealing to a certain predilection of at least one member of the bench. So I appreciate your comprehensive response to my answer. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Justice Gableman. In terms of the history, I just wanted to finish up. The ABA has been looking at this. In 1996, now 21 years ago, it adopted its business section, an endorsement, and a recommendation to the states that they adopt business courts. And since that time to 2007, 11 did it. Why do I mention 2007? 2007, the National Chief Justices Association also adopted a resolution also endorsing business courts for the same reason, efficiency, better justice, et cetera, for all the states. And since the Chief Justices recommended and created a resolution to that effect, the increase in business courts has been even greater. I counted 26. One of my betters, who I would always defer, one of the judges, counted 31. I do know this, is that the pace is increasing, and there'd be no reason that Wisconsin would not want to have the same advantages for our court, particularly where it stands to the possibility of bettering the justice for all the various dockets by removing some of the most complicated, time-consuming cases that many judges wouldn't care to handle anyway.
Chairman Rothstein, thank you. I join with my colleagues in thanking you for the immense amount of good work you've done on this rule of petition and in thinking this through. I'm wondering, in particular with respect to the states surrounding us, what their experience has been in accomplishing the objectives for having a business court docket. So, for example, one of the asserted benefits is that the amount of litigation would decrease as the commercial community gained guidance from the decisions of the business court judges. Has that played out? Do we have any evidence on that?
What I can report, Justice Kelly, is that, again, by doing a meta-analysis of, and there's much written about this, is one of the effects that they have seen that they believe, and it's because of this feature. Many of them, as part of the business court or commercial court, also make available published decisions from that court. And it makes sense. They're now specialized. They have a little more time to draft written decisions. And if those are publicized, the thinking is, and it's not just one state, but multiple states and bar associations and judicial entities believe that that has resulted in a reduction of litigation. Why? Well, now you have some guidance. It may not be from the Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals, but on these business cases, if you have just a written decision that seems sensible, it tends to avoid those. And I would submit to you, one of the first business courts that I think we all know is the courts, the Chancery Courts of Delaware, which specialize in business cases. It's now recognized. And precisely because of what you're speaking of, because of the more case law, more published decisions, it tends to reduce the number of cases. It saves money for businesses, which is another reason why the business courts and the entities who would subscribe to it would like that specialization for this element of our society.
And has the commercial community recognized the benefit of having a specialized docket like this? Attracted new businesses to these states? Has it retained businesses that might have otherwise left?
In my studies, I didn't find anything to that effect, but what I did find is that almost universal acclaim that they believe that this development, a business court in their state, improves their state's business environment. And I can tell you this, I believe that we are the outlier in that regard, and I don't know why for businesses such as Johnson Control, Epic, you know, you name it, Oshkosh Truck, why we wouldn't want to have the same business environment, at least equal. And I believe our state can be the leader on this. I really do. And I salute the court for taking the steps that it has. But that's what I can tell you on that particular issue.
Again, how did you select Waukesha and the Eighth Circuit?
We looked first. This is a very tough issue for us. And the first thing we had to do was we had to find counties with enough judges. It doesn't make sense to go down to Greene County with one judge. You're going to get that judge. So we had to limit ourselves to judges with counties or locations with a sufficient number of judges where we could spread the load, find some specialization, get benefits out of the system. We picked Waukesha because it's near Milwaukee. I was adverse to Milwaukee because Milwaukee has 47 branches already. It has its own particular burdens being the heaviest metropolitan area. It has many dockets itself. And it had a negative experience, 25, 26 years ago. And that negative experience was because it was a voluntary system. It was tried by Judge Pat Sheedy at the time. And it died on the vine because it was voluntary. And that's why we made this mandatory. Why?
I suggest it didn't die on the vine because it was voluntary or mandatory. It had requirements that, such as limiting discovery, because discovery is expensive for business, and so it limited discovery. It reduced timelines so that you got a faster decision. It also had a dollar amount, which your proposal does not have, as I remember this and when I checked it. And when business looked at these things, they said, hey, we like discovery. We may need it. We're not willing to limit it. We're not willing to use these fast lines. And the dollar amounts were such. And I don't think it was very much. My recollection was $25,000, but I could be wrong on that. So that's why it fell, not because it was mandatory or voluntary. If it's mandatory and you're forcing business to do something they don't want, then we got a real problem. Now, that's my...
I can add this to this. The Milwaukee experience, I don't recall the monetary limitation. It did limit discovery. That was a negative. No jury trials. That was a negative. No summary judgment motions. Well, I can tell you for For businesses, that's a big negative. Mm-hmm. But I do believe whether that was the cause or the effect, I know the effect. Nobody was using it. But that's why in this case, we have identified very carefully. This spent a lot of time identifying what cases should go to the business court. Business cases such as control of the corporation, fights on the board of directors, shareholder derivative claims, things of that nature. And then, in fairness, to make sure this is a specialty court, not an unfairness court, we carved out very specifically all cases dealing with regular consumer actions, products liability, medical malpractice, government cases seeking fines.
What about an entity suing the government?
That's going to be part of, the pilot plan to work that out.
But that's not in the list, either for or against.
I can tell you what the petition says. Cases involving a government entity, or political subdivision, seeking to enforce a statutory or regulatory restriction or prohibition. So it seems to me, if it's a government entity involved enforcing or a regulatory mm-hmm. matter or prohibition, it would be not in the business court.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. And so that's.
So if the government sues you, it's not in. What if you sue the government for an injunction?
Well, again, this I don't mean to take on the position of a judge. As somebody who's involved in this.
It, I wanted to know whether you thought it was covered.
I would think it would be excluded.
I thought that was the case.
Yeah. So. And our whole thinking behind this was we want to give an advantage to our entire state community without harming or prejudicing anyone. This is to get better justice and more efficiency in the courts versus being unfair in any respect, just the reverse.
You know, I went through the Wisconsin Judges Directory. I don't know if you have an opportunity to see it. I don't know if it's online. It's online for the court system, but I don't know if it's open to the public. Did you look at it?
The state bar bulletin we put out, you can find all the judges.
Right, good. And I looked to see how many judges there were that show their past experience were in private practice. And then whether their private practice seemed to be business. And then how recent. And those judges who may have been in private practice that had that may have had business experiences, I can't tell that. Most of the judges have been on for a long time. Now that's going to change as the years go by. So how many judges do you expect to get from this list? I found two possibilities in Waukesha, one in Marinette, and a few maybes. That's my first question. My second question is, how do you expect to train judges?
You have two questions there. Yeah. Waukesha is that we recommended two. We looked at the various counties to make sure that if you picked the county, there would be people with the experience mm-hmm. that you could select. Mm-hmm. That was one reason that we picked Waukesha. And I will speak because you never want to speak for yourself. I think they have strong candidates in Waukesha for the business board. Mm-hmm. We also picked, and I have to compliment Chief Judge of the 8th Judicial District, Jim Morrison.
Mm-hmm. That's Marinette. I put him down as a possible attorney.
But he came up with the idea.
2012 is when he got on the bench.
Of a judicial district, not a county. Why? He had to explain it. But, we have more counties that are small than are large. And we want to extend the benefits of this program to all the counties. So how do we get a pilot that incorporates small counties? It's the judicial administration districts. There are, I believe, seven counties in that district. I think there's 24 judges, a sufficient number where we can find the judges with the sort of experience that you want. So that's how we picked, and I believe that it gives us a better cross-section of data collection so that we can roll this out to not just the big counties. That's not fair. I've had some of my biggest cases in very small counties. My biggest case, number of parties, was up in Barron. I had 200 defendants, very moneyed case. So the fact that it's a small county doesn't mean that it doesn't have needs, too. And this allows it to be done. And with the judicial district, like the 8th, it's already statutorily created. We don't have to do anything. The chief judge in each judicial district can assign judges cross-county. So it was a wonderful way to go about it. I fully endorsed it.
Counsel, if I could just interject briefly, as a trial court judge in Washington County, we were subject to and part of a number of pilot projects and enjoyed kind of taking that role on and trying to help create a better environment before it would spread to every county in the state. It makes a lot of sense to have pilot projects. I didn't really have a question about the determination of who or how those pilot projects would occur, because they're kind of a incubator, if you will. And then as things get sort of considered along the way, they're fine-tuned before they're presented to a larger audience. Milwaukee, I don't think, at least it's been my experience, they haven't always, if ever, been on the front end of that kind of a pilot project, because it's just a unique environment there. Well, it depends. E-filing, for example, no. In-court CCAT processing, for example, no.
The evidence-based sentencing, they've been on the cutting edge in certain areas.
That's a different ballgame, because they do have specialized courts already. Having said that, I'm talking about when you're creating a new kind of court, new in-court, other than treatment courts. So that really isn't the question. You've got to start somewhere, as far as I'm concerned, and why not where you've selected. My question, and second, Judge Stark actually pulled me aside and talked to me about her letter to make sure that no one misconstrued it as a letter against the business courts. So we don't want that to be perceived, or at least that's what she told me, as a letter against. She was just imparting her wisdom with respect to having data that supports determinations that you make. So she you know, comes from a background, and a lot of us do, whether you're on in community-involved organizations or, you know, United Way decides how to select. I mean, all over the place, people are using data to make determinations as to what they're going to do. So I think that was the purpose of her letter, just try to figure out if there's a way to measure this and see if it is better. So I just wanted to put that out there. But my question of you is one of vision. I loved having a general jurisdiction calendar. And that might be a dying breed, but I loved it. I loved everything about having a civil, criminal, family, juvenile, probate, adoptions, thousands of cases in probably every area. I loved, on occasion, having a complex civil litigation matter before me. And at the same time, you know, you have some really tough felonies or criminals or 980s or family cases. And for me, that made the bench a really enjoyable experience, having that kind of broad-based challenge on a regular basis. So how does a judge like me, when I was a trial court judge, fit into your vision of a business court? Because I felt like I did a pretty good job on all those, and you don't have to comment on that, but, you know, for me, it was really a good experience having a broad base of cases.
Surely, and I would expect that experience to go on. Of course, you came from Washington County. I think that's a 3-judge district?
Four-judge
district. Well, that's, of course, much different than a Waukesha or a Dane County or a Milwaukee. A Milwaukee having 47 judges. Because of that, they simply couldn't have 47 general practitioners or general judges. It wouldn't work. And why? You need the specialization for more efficiency and frankly, better outcomes. But I would expect that whether you're from Washington County, Ashland, you know, Barron County, whatever, those are going to be the same experiences that they had before. But, and Justice Ziegler, you, of course, you expressed that you enjoyed that. That was your experience. I believe I've talked to judges. I've not done a scientific survey, but about half the judges, they have no interest whatever in serving on this. None. That's not what they enjoy, for whatever reason. Another, I'll say half. I don't know if it's half, but another, I would be interested. Some already have the experience, or some are willing to make the commitment to get the experience to do it. I say God bless, Godspeed. So back to your question is, you know, I think that really what you're asking me about is the dynamic of different practices, whether you're from Calumet, a one-judge county, or you're from Dane County, which is an umpteen number of judges. It's going to be a different practice. I believe overall for the justice of the state, the efficiency, I commend your leadership on this, because this is an advancement. It truly is. And as for data, I would submit, I thought about bringing all of the plans and the research done by the various states. And they did the same thing we did, Minnesota, for instance. They didn't redo surveys. They did the meta-analyses that I described to you. They looked at other states' experience, what their outcomes were. And they all concluded the same thing. And I can cite to you, Minnesota cited 18 actual surveys of, you know, what's the problem, et cetera, that going with specialization is a way to better the system, not only for the business environment and courts, but also the overall justice system. It's more efficient, and it results in better outcomes.
You know what we found when we did that? For many, many, many years, judges ran for a particular branch, multiple branches, and they were specialized. They would be in juvenile court or small claims or civil or criminal. And we found at that time that judges became case-hardened. You know, they said, gee, didn't we hear that one yesterday or the day before? They were unhappy. It was also a situation where instead of being creative and new, and it was same old. And so we moved into a rotation system, which has its disadvantages because you're not as experienced. On the other hand, the judge is trained when the judge comes in and gets special courses to do it. And the judge brings creativity from other sources and branches and has a new outlook. It differs from county to county, but 2 years to 4 years on a particular rotation system. And at first, the judges had great difficulty, which you would expect because you're put into a new challenge, and that's not easy. But so what's your position here about rotation of the judges out? One. Number two, and how are you going to educate them?
I support rotation. It's not just the judiciary. You can see this in religious institutions, corporations, et cetera, new blood.
Law firms.
Law firms, same way. So I support that. But I have the advantage of coming from Milwaukee, which has 47 different branches. And, you know, one of the branches is sensitive crimes or first-degree murder. And you get a full diet of that. 4 years, I believe, is their rotation. I can guarantee you in assigning that, it's not... You look for a judge who has experience. Why? That's a very important docket. If a hardened criminal goes free because of a judicial mistake, that's a real travesty. So you're not going to go to that docket without some experience. I would submit to you one of the most important elements of our society here in Wisconsin is our business environment. It pays our taxes. It employs our people. It makes our livelihood. Why wouldn't we want the same specialization and advantages to increasing justice for them as any others? I can't imagine.
How are you going to train the judges? If I look through this list, most of the judges in these counties come from, first of all, they're on the bench a long time. So even if they were in private practice in corporate, complex, commercial cases, and you can take me as an example, been on the bench a long time. The whole business area and the law has changed in the 40 years I've been here since I've practiced law. And you've got judges here, many of whom came before 2000. So even if they had private practice, which they didn't, it would be quite old. So you have to train, we have to train the judges. And one of the problems that I see is the statement that this is not going to be to cost the system any money. Well, it has to cost the system money. You have to train the judges. You want the trial court decisions are not published now. You have to have some system of publication, of gathering the cases together and publishing them. There's in many of the business courts that we have a several business courts in our folders here that we have in front of us, the judges get law clerks, right? Because it's complex stuff, right? And that costs money. In addition to that, it seems to me that in many of these states, they really provide for a special master or referee, whichever one you want to call it, because a lot of these issues are discovery issues, and a special master can do them. And there's a statute of allowing special masters here. That costs money, not necessarily to the state, but to the parties. And I don't see that in this.
Here I'm out of my area of expertise, but at least for the lawyers, many lawyers, I'm from a large firm, and I get a certain amount of money that I can dedicate to continuing legal education. I specialize in areas, I tend to go to those things. They don't have to tell me, it's no increase, I'm not getting more money, that's my interest. Mm-hmm. I would expect for the judges, those who have an interest, either because they have the experience, such as you said for yourself, or because I want to learn that, it's exciting to me. They can take their existing dollars and spend it that way. And it would seem to me that's simply a choice, that's not spending more money.
Well, one, judges, we have our own judicial education programs, that's on the internet, and I don't remember seeing, we have a civil education program, but I don't remember seeing something on complex litigation or commercial litigation as such, but it may have been done. And we don't allow judges to use state money to go outside the state.
Okay, so
Well, that's really
some
a little
of those
bit far afield
might be
from where we are
changing
today.
On the Judicial Education Committee. That may or may not be changing. Having said that, we have all sorts of things that have developed in recent years where we now have specialized education on domestic violence courts, or judges have gone different places for particularized knowledge with respect to that. That's not something that I would think would be of great concern. I would hope that judicial education would continue to grow and expand to meet the needs of whatever the judges are. But it didn't start there. We didn't have those educational materials first, always, before we did a pilot project.
Justice Rebecca Bradley is trying to ask a question.
I have a follow-up question to Justice Abrahamson's question, because as I was listening to her question, it brought to mind my own experience. I left private practice, 16 years of private practice, focused on business litigation and business transactional work in 2012, and became a circuit court judge assigned to children's court. And as I've said frequently, I had never stepped foot in children's court until I stepped into that court as a judge. And so I can speak to Justice Abrahamson's question a little bit, because one of the advantages of jumping into a specialty court is that you get a lot of on-the-job training very quickly. And especially in the larger counties, I was in Milwaukee County, I was able to draw on the experiences of my more experienced colleagues when I was first starting out. And so I think there's an advantage there to that kind of on-the-job training. But also I was able to, on my own initiative, attend the NCJ-FCJ College, the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges, programming on a national level. There was some funding available. In fact, I don't think any of the funding came from the state of Wisconsin or the judiciary. It came from national grant money or scholarship money that was available. Are you aware of anything comparable that would be helpful to a judge stepping into a business court environment? Although I note that this proposal specifically is targeting judges who already have that experience, even if it came from the past.
Yeah, we recommended judges with experience. Why? Well, this is the pilot plan. You want to give it the best shot going forward for the test period. Training is a longer-term thing. And, of course, in terms of resources and things like that, I think there should be training. Those people who really express an interest and want to do it, they should be given an opportunity to do that. And I would expect that the Supreme Court supports that. You want to have judges who are happy and, you know, have a successful and, you know, enjoyable experience on the bench. In any event, I wanted to thank you. I think the court is...
I have some questions for you.
Oh, great.
First of all, you gave the history of the creation of courts and different jurisdictions, and also here in the state of Wisconsin. It was 22 years ago that G. Lane Ware, God rest his soul, approached me and said, Ann, we need a business court in the state of Wisconsin. So I look up to the heavens and say, Lane.
He's celebrating.
Oh, I don't know. Lane. Here's your day. Now's your hour.
I didn't know we had divine intervention.
Well, we can only hope. But I have some concerns also. From my perspective, this train has left the station. That is, I mentioned Lane 22 years ago approaching me about this. But for 16 years, we have had open rule hearings, as we have here. And never before in 16 years has the court approved a petition before even having a hearing on it. And so I see our hearing today to make better, to ask good questions, and to make better and improve to the extent possible the proposal that we've adopted already, to see if we can, it needs improvement, and how it should be improved and what are some of the potential pitfalls. So first, G. Lane Ware, God rest his soul. Secondly, we've already left the station, but treating this petition differently than any other petition has been treated in 16 years. We've got to be careful about that. And third, I want to touch base with the letter that's been previously addressed, and that is the letter of Judge Lisa Stark. Now, I haven't had the opportunity to talk with Judge Stark about this letter or her thoughts on business court. But let me say to those here present and who will continue working on business court, in my opinion, there is probably no one in this state, maybe one person, that matches Judge Stark's knowledge in incorporating the creation of specialty courts with evidence-based sentencing and administrative experience. So I say that because these questions that she is raising are important questions, and questions that I think you should all give some heed to. Everyone comes with a different perspective. That's one of the wonderful things about a committee. You've got strengths that you bring together. But I'm telling you, this is a letter that you should not brush off as, oh, yes, but. They're important and thoughtful questions. I read her letter as saying, okay, you want a business court. Let's do this in a business-like way. And she asks, first of all, before you commit time and resources and energy, number one, is there any evidence of delay in terms of the need of this court? Number two, is there any evidence of a lack of predictable results? And number three, any evidence of unfair handling of cases? Because that's the premise for establishing the court. Now, again, I underscore the train has left the station, right? So you can fall miserably in answering this question, and you're still going to prevail, so that you shouldn't be nervous about it. But number one, is there any evidence of delay right now in the state of Wisconsin? Other than anecdotal, you know, you don't do stuff on anecdotal. Well, my case took 18 months, and therefore I have a problem.
I rarely refer to Minnesota for anything, but in this case, Minnesota preceded us in creating a business court, and they went through this process. And their report read this: the task force considered but ultimately rejected the need for a Minnesota-based survey to confirm that excessive cost and delay are significant problems in our civil justice system. The work of the Civil Justice Forum, the experience of the task force members, and the survey and studies conducted elsewhere adequately support this view. Any further survey would be duplicative and potentially wasteful valuable time and resources. And then they cited 18 different surveys showing the various data that you're looking for. The American Bar Association Section of Litigation Member Survey on Civil Practice, the Civil Litigation Survey of Chief Legal Officers and General Counsel, the Trial Bench Views Findings of the National Survey on Civil Procedure, and 15 other surveys. And I have to join theirs is that this is back to the meta-analysis. I believe there's a wealth of data which already shows that unless courts take advantage of these advantages offered by complex business courts or complex litigation, you're losing out, you're making your other courts absorb those inefficiencies. And it's unfair to the business community.
My question,
so there is data.
Here in Wisconsin, is there any data?
No, all I can tell you is that I don't know why the business environment in our state would be different than Minnesota, Iowa, Michigan. I think that that would be a false suspicion.
And to
spend the dollars, I think that the wise system would be, is there a likelihood that we're going to find a difference? And if there's not, I wouldn't spend the money.
I'm not so sure if it's a matter of spending the dollars. You talk about a survey. My sense is the source of this information is not a survey, but in our weighted caseload study. That can give us the information as to, in Wisconsin. Second question, is there any evidence for a lack of predictable results, which was the second foundation? Now, I ask these questions in part, I'm not sure you're going to be able to say, yes, there's evidence. My guess is you're going to say, no, there's no evidence that you can rely on. To underscore the importance, when this goes forward, you better have this kind of evidence, right?
Again, I would cite to you the 18 different surveys that Minnesota found persuasive.
Yeah, I wrote an opinion that was joined by members of this court not too long ago on evidence-based sentencing, and I said, don't talk to me about New York. I don't know how they do that. And, of course, when you talk about Minnesota, I smile because we're all Norwegian at heart, and so that translates perhaps a little bit more. But the problem with going into things without the data and saying, yeah, but look what happened in Ohio, it may get you to first base, but it doesn't get you to home, that's for sure. So that underscores the need for that. With regard to the third thing she asks, any unfair handling of cases, that was another premise that was asserted. Any evidence in Wisconsin that we are suffering from unfair handling of cases?
I believe I need to add this, in fairness to my committee, is that that was the precise reason that we came up with the suggestion of a pilot plan, precisely to address what you're talking about. We rejected rolling it out statewide. That would not be wise. But a pilot plan so we can get data, additional data, tailored right to Wisconsin so that we can make it right size for our state. I would submit you would not want to forego the experiment to prejudge it and say, let's not do it.
Ten years ago, it may help, but I'm not sure that it will. Didn't you say 10 years ago the chief judges?
Yeah, the National Association of Chief Judges also had a resolution endorsed affirming and recommending to the states that they adopt business courts.
Well enough. I'm talking about the state of Wisconsin. Is there a need? And if we're going to construct it, then it's got to be, we want it to work, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, as is stated in page 4 of the letter I'm referring to, we should not create the impression that business above all deserves the fastest, most cost-effective, most predictable, and fairest disposition of cases. We have a little bit of an image issue that we've got to come to terms with and really work with and try to ameliorate that, much like the issue that you were talking about earlier in terms of judges and judge satisfaction. Another point raised in this letter that I thought really had great moment, and that is, what message does this send to our other judges? And the letter talks about giving other judges an opportunity also. And so it commends to those involved to avoid any oppression that the creation of the CCD is politically motivated and to avoid other unintended consequences. And that is that judges, our judges in the state of Wisconsin will be disheartened because it may give the impression that they aren't good enough or qualified enough, or they aren't allowed to handle types of cases that they would find, again, quoting from page 4, interesting, challenging, and rewarding. So what, if anything, do you have in mind to take care of some of these image concerns? Because we as a court have to be fair, you know, impartial, neutral, and these concerns, you know, whether or not they are based in evidence, are expressed here, and I'd like them addressed.
I would give you experience of the larger counties with multiple branches. Milwaukee, with multiple different dockets. And, again, I don't believe that, well, you're on children's court, you're a lesser person as a circuit court judge and somebody serving on felony.
Thank you for saying that.
No, but...
Everyone can rotate. If you get the experience, if you have the desire to do it, I support that. And I don't think this is a negative. I believe our judges will view this positively.
If you take care and if you create it the right way, they will, and that's your challenge, you know.
And that's
part off to you, because it's going to be a wonderful endeavor, but you've got to be mindful of those kinds of pitfalls that aren't just to be brushed aside. She knows what she's talking about.
And I think that that's an appropriate thing during a 3-year pilot. It should be looked at, investigated, and cared for. And I agree with you, is that I've always believed is that the success of this program depends upon the judges. You know, if we don't get a good judge sitting on the bench, it doesn't help you much.
I'm glad you mentioned Milwaukee County because I think it provides a great example that might allay some of the concerns voiced by Judge Stark and other Justice Bradley down the bench. Because in Milwaukee County, there is an opportunity for the judges to communicate with the chief judge there what rotation they might like to have, but most judges are assigned according to what the chief judge says, and there's seniority comes into play, certainly. So in my particular circumstance, like all new judges, I did not get to select my area. I was placed at Children's Court, and I was very glad to have had that opportunity. It was a tremendous experience, and I can also speak to having communicated with a number of my colleagues who said, oh boy, I have to go to whatever division, and they really didn't want to. And then they found out, this is great. I'm really glad I went here. I learned a new area of the law. 4 years is enough for me. But I think that this is, I envision how business court assignments are going to work out, is that there will be this sort of informal conversation that goes on where judges will communicate, hey, I'm interested in this. My resume publicly might not show. I do have background experience. I'd like to be considered for this. I don't know that we necessarily need a formal process for that. I know that's something that's been proposed, but I'd be interested in hearing yours, or maybe somebody, one of the other presenters, is going to speak to that, but I'd be interested in hearing about that.
We have many speakers, and
We do, and I want to try to conclude your presentation, though I don't want to dampen my colleagues' ability to ask questions. I think the comments of my colleagues can be better taken up at our open administrative conference, so if we want to make speeches to one another, that's a better place. I am going to limit all of the other speakers to 5 minutes apiece, so when they get up, they get the yellow light and you get the red light. Otherwise, we are not going to conclude. So I think, Justice Bradley, I'm not sure that you were finished, Justice Ann Bradley. Thank you. What I will do, though, in the interest of time, is I'll save some of my questions for those that are on the lineup.
Good.
I have a question. How does this reduce costs?
Excuse me?
How does this program reduce? I mean, you said delay and costs were two of the main things. How does this reduce costs?
Because.
And the biggest cost is council fees.
Yes, it is. Because I think we all can
deal with this or have experience. If you have somebody who is unfamiliar or is brand new to the bench and you have a complicated shareholder derivative claim or a class action where you have class certification issues, class representation, I can
guarantee... Those are very few in this state.
Well, it happened to be my practice. And sometimes you lucked out and you got somebody who was enjoying it, and other times it was painful. And the cost came is that both avoidance or, difficulties, et cetera.
So you think it was the uneducated judge that caused
the lack of specialization.
I just want to know.
And I can understand the big case I told you about in Barron County. Well, that judge had a full bench. He was doing misdemeanors one day. He was doing, probate the next.
Is that Jerome Foods?
It's been 10 years now.
It's about the right time.
Okay. And all I know is that we had over 200 lawyers in this courtroom. In any event, I want to thank the court. I want to salute the court for its leadership on this. I think this is important. I think it poses a great opportunity for our judiciary and our state to improve our business environment and to help our justice in the meantime. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you so much. Oh, great. You know how to work our stand. Good.
We have a lesson. May it please the court. I enjoy being back as an advocate. I am here, Mike Abrahamian. As you know, I'm a judge in Waukesha County. Waukesha County is one of the counties that was identified as a recipient of the pilot project, and I can tell you Waukesha County is very excited to have it. I've talked to some of the practitioners in Waukesha County. They're excited to have it. I think Mr. Rothstein already explained how Waukesha was selected. I would like to address some of the concerns expressed by my friend Judge Stark in her letter and some of the questions that Judge Bradley and Walsh Bradley had regarding where's the data. As John Rothstein had said, we relied upon other surveys, just like when alcohol treatment courts were first established in Wisconsin, it was established based upon other data, not testing that was done in Wisconsin specifically. There's a right to rely upon that. And this is a pilot project in order to get more data. Judge Stark is very into evidence-based decision-making. I'm into evidence-based decision-making. I'm a presiding judge of alcohol treatment court in Waukesha County. Waukesha County is one of the eight counties in the state that has part of the grant for evidence-based decision-making. I sit on two committees that deals with evidence-based decision-making. I'm up to my knees at evidence-based decision-making.
Federally funded?
I'm sorry?
Federally funded?
The federally funded grant where I think there's three states. Wisconsin's one of the three states. There are eight counties. Waukesha is one of the eight counties. I serve on two committees. I can say I sit in the pew of the evidence-based decision-making church. I don't kneel at the altar of evidence-based decision-making. Too many people, I think, put emphasis on statistics over other evidence, other anecdotal evidence, just like a drunk man uses a light post, uses it for support as opposed to illumination. That's what sometimes statistics and those advocates of statistics do. They rely upon the statistics for support of their position and not really to illuminate what's going on.
On the other hand, an anecdotal comment from a judge in South Carolina or North Carolina is informative but not necessarily instructive.
Absolutely true. And you give it the weight it deserves, just like other evidence. But when you rely upon statistics, you rely upon what are we measuring and how are you measuring it. And there's some values that are very difficult to measure and to add some statistical significance to. We're in the justice business. How do you measure justice? Justice is a perception. You rely upon that based upon anecdotal evidence. What are people saying about it? There's some things you can't measure, which is, I think, what Justice Kelly mentioned, which is some cases may not actually be brought because there is some authoritative decision out there. Is it from the highest court? Absolutely not. Sometimes these cases don't percolate all the way up to the highest court. But there's some reasoned decision that businesses can rely upon and guide their conduct and resolve a dispute so it doesn't get to court.
Judge Stark suggests that based on her experience and her review of this matter, the number of cases likely will be quite low. Do you share that?
I don't know. I have had a conversation with the Circuit Court Clerk, Kathleen Madden, in Waukesha, in anticipation of this going forward to try and identify the number of cases that would fit. Unfortunately, the case codes don't match up to our category of cases.
Right.
I have no idea, and I would say and submit that's the purpose of the pilot project. A lot of these issues you're talking about, rotation, concerns about other judges. That's a concern we address 3 years from now when this project is A-OK and we want to implement it statewide.
Seems,
then you address concerns about rotation.
Seems to me the issues that I've heard are delay and costs, right? And a judge who causes costs and delay because they're uneducated or not sufficiently educated to handle it. All right. Any other? What other problems? Then we can test whether these resolve it. But if you don't have a baseline, and this is one of Ms. Judge Stark's points, if you don't know what's happening now, how do you evaluate whether this is a success?
It's difficult to evaluate, but that's the whole purpose of the pilot project.
Well, you can't evaluate the pilot project unless you can compare it with what happened before. I mean, if it cost X amount per case before, if the delay was caused by the judge, if the delay was caused because the lawyers wanted delay, I mean, you know, lawyers don't always want a speedy resolution. How do you know? I mean, what the problem?
I think there's measurements of cases. You can see how long they've been pending. You can try and draw an analysis, and you can rely upon that historical data. That's something that'll be part of the process of this pilot project.
What's
we don't
the
have
historical
all.
Data? That's what I'm asking.
You'll be able to identify cases that are in the same category, potentially.
Well, you can't
a shareholder dispute that was pending pre-pilot project. How long did that case go? And try and draw an analysis to a case that now is a shareholder dispute as part of the pilot project. How long did that go?
That's good. That's good.
But that's what the purpose of the pilot project is, Justice.
Well, but it says in this, it won't be costly. Evaluation is very costly. And you have to hire somebody to...
Well, we have director of state courts with lots of people that are doing work for us. On the PPAC committee, I said, there's some people, I don't know how they justify their jobs, but hopefully they can get some work and do some of these statistical analysis. That's what they're there for.
Well, we have, I think, one statistician, but that's fine. And
there was a proposal to have four.
I know.
And I spoke out against two, but I think the request was to get asked for four in
right.
hopes of getting
and,
two.
And the court, this court, refused to put
that's
it
right.
in its budget.
That's right. That's okay. right.
That's all.
Because it wasn't a very well-defined project.
Yeah.
So we got, that's an issue. I think that it's very good to run pilot programs. I think it's very good, but they're only successful to the extent you can evaluate them. To evaluate them, you have to know what you had before to see if they're working. And we just don't know what we have now. And I don't know how you're going to find out what we have now because the supposition
well, we still have all the information about the cases that have been pending before. That's data that we have. We can find those cases. But
well,
you're only measuring certain things. There's also the perception of the participants in the legal system,
mm-hmm.
and what is their view of how things are being accomplished. That's the surveys that came from Iowa, and we're going to have similar type of surveys, I would suspect, as part of this pilot project,
mm-hmm.
and to see whether they're getting justice, whether they believe justice has been served.
What do you think the cost will be to the state on running this pilot
project? I was a poli sci major.
Pardon?
I was a poli sci major. Don't ask me numbers. Finance. I have no idea.
I was a poli-sci major,
yeah.
and I know numbers.
We're speaking each other's language then. I don't know what the
no,
numbers are. That's why you're asking the question, because you were a poli-sci major. You don't know.
No,
I don't
no.
know either.
I'm asking the question because I cannot get the numbers. CCAP says it doesn't have the numbers, and that's what the testimony was. And I called the chief judge of the chief judges and asked, did the workload study show anything? And he's checking that.
It doesn't match
not.
The caption numbers, so you're
well,
not going to find anything.
Well, that's the point.
That's CCAP.
That's
a little
right.
different.
That's
sounds like
point.
We're going to have to roll up our sleeves as part of the three
that's
years
right.
to try and do some analysis.
So
but the point is we have to start.
Somebody has to roll up the sleeves, and that's going to be costly. And you can't do an evaluation unless you know what the comparison is.
Okay,
and
well,
maybe have a control.
Good. That, Judge Abrahamian, thank you very much for your presentation. We're going to move on now to Attorney Brenner, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
If it pleases the court, I'm Laura Brenner. I'm a shareholder at Reinhardt Berner Van Doren, and I've been a business litigator, without revealing my age too much, for over 25 years.
So you're at least 26.
Thank you. Yes, yes. You moved up on my list of favorite justices right to the top. Well over Justice Kelly, who I used to work with. I represent both large and small companies, mostly corporate clients, some individuals, but mostly corporate clients, and both plaintiff and defense side. I was a member of the, or am a member of the Business Court Advisory Committee, and I'm here today just to say I do support the work of the committee. I do support the petition. I wanted to just say a few words about the selection of the cases that we wanted to include in the commercial court docket. I was on the subcommittee that helped the committee pick the types of cases that would be included and that would not be included. And we were really looking at the types of cases that could benefit from a business court. So we were really focused on mostly business-to-business cases, or also including intracorporate fights between owners and managers of a corporation and LLCs. These are usually complex cases. They involve business-related statutes, usually. They often involve multiple parties, lots of evidence, lots of electronic information from resources in Wisconsin, outside of Wisconsin, and everybody has 12 devices. So they're usually complex cases from a business side, complex cases from an evidentiary side. So we examined the types of cases that were included in business dockets in other courts in other states. We didn't copy them. We had to look at what was good for Wisconsin. We also looked at the types of statutes that are here in Wisconsin. We have some very special ones. We also looked at the types of businesses and the types of business cases that we have in Wisconsin. And in the end, we came up with what we think is a good list.
Counsel, when I went through the list, and one of the areas discussed on the list this morning was the excluded area of government bringing in enforcement action. Mm-hmm. And this just came to mind, and perhaps you can keep it in mind, and that is, you just mentioned now, Wisconsin has some unique statutes. In some areas, one of the unique statutes in Wisconsin are private attorney general actions. And so I don't know if you took that into consideration, and if you did not, you might wish to. I just point that out.
Yeah, and there are going to be things at the edges that we wondered about. Should we include those extra things? Should we exclude them? We figured this is just a pilot program. For now, we thought this was a good list. Let's exclude the government as party for now. If we are excluding a lot, for example, on a DAT cap case, that's not brought by a private party, but that could be brought by the government. Are we missing those cases? Are we getting a lot of those types of cases, but we're missing the government side of it? Then I think after a period of time, after a little experience with this program, we could fine-tune this list.
Yes,
and I think it is going to
mention that because you indicated unique Wisconsin statutes, and it is apparent to me that you want to exclude government action, enforcement action, and I just point out that there are enforcement actions that may be taken in a private individual capacity. And if you didn't consider those, you might want to, and if you did and for some reason didn't include it, that's fine too, but I just point that out.
No, I think that's something to take into account, and I think we will need to keep an eye on those things and say, are we missing something? Or do we have too much? I think those are things that we are going to have to examine. Clearly, we didn't include everything. We really tried as a committee. We literally read tons of statutes. We tried to figure out. We tried to use our experience. A lot of us are litigators in different areas or have been litigators in different areas. So we brought to bear a lot of experience. We did a lot of work. It's not going to be a perfect list.
What about insurance cases? We get a fair amount of one insurance company sues another insurance company, because that's really who pays. I didn't find that.
And I'm trying to remember if it's an indemnification case against two companies.
Could be indemnification, could be subrogation. I don't know. It could be any number of things under the policy, or there may be separate deals between the companies, but that's too business companies, and that's complex. And the banks came in and they said, include us.
And they did, and they included, I think we had originally missed perhaps a few statutes. One of the things the banking association came and reminded us is we don't want to leave them out as an association. We had included partnerships and LLCs and everything else, and I think we did miss them, or they didn't want to be not included. I think the list was probably broad enough, but it's good to include that.
What about estates? Estates. Somebody dies. There's an estate. The estate has business and has business interests. That's not included.
It's not included. So what we try to do is we try to not include the cases that are more individual. So we're not including the product liability, the estate claims, the family claims. If it's an estate that is a corporation, I know I've seen some cases where an estate is the party suing, but they're suing under the Fair Dealership Law. They're suing under, then I would
but
say.
They have an interest in a corporation.
Yeah. But if it's an estate-based claim where we're arguing over a will, that's an individual claim.
That,
I think that's an easy.
But it's not in the definition. And there's a provision in the program that if there's a conflict with an existing state statute or a practice or a rule, the existing rules govern.
I'm sorry, are you talking about conflict of laws or?
No, right. If there's a provision in this that says if there's a guideline, if there's something in this program and it conflicts with an existing rule, procedure, statute, the existing statute governs.
That will be correct. This isn't meant to override any statute that will cover. That is
true.
Yeah.
How does this reduce costs?
So this will reduce costs to the parties in a couple ways. I represent a lot of companies, and they do get worried about coming to the state court. It reduces costs in that we won't have to spend a lot of time educating a judge about the basics of some of these laws. Sometimes you're worried about that. If you can come into court and say, I don't have to file a whole lot of briefs to educate the judge on the Fair Dealership Law, for example, or the state or the sales rep law. And then having a judge right on top of the new ESI rules, how AI is going to apply to the discovery rules, you can have a conversation right up front. Mm-hmm. And then I think also staging. When you handle more business cases, you sort of know there's going to be, is there a community of interest issue that we should address up front in a dealership case? Is there a jurisdictional issue we should address up front? I think you get used to staging, and I think all of those things will make it less costly, especially for those smaller businesses who say, gosh.
You're not going to reduce the costs of attorney fees except in the education of the judge.
Is it going to reduce the cost of attorney's fees?
It will.
It will to the
educate
client.
Educate the judge. Because that's where the costs are coming in, because you have to educate judges.
The cost would be...
The second one I've asked, and it's the same answer.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding. I'm thinking if I have to file a brief to explain the Fair Dealership Law,
I agree.
That's a lot of money. If I don't have to do that, my client won't have to pay for it, and they're going to be pretty happy about that.
So you reduce costs if you have an educated judge.
Yeah, I think that's right. When you've seen... Thank you so much.
Chief Justice, might I ask a question? I know the red light is on.
Yes, do. And then we are going to move after this question on to Attorney Weber.
Very good. Thank you. Ms. Brenner, I can't tell you how delighted I am to see you here this morning. Welcome.
Thank you.
And thanks so much for the work that you have done on this project. I know that you have a very sophisticated practice. A number of people on the committee have sophisticated practices in commercial litigation and across the country. I'm wondering if there's been discussion amongst the committee members about their experiences in other states that have business courts and how that compares to practice in Wisconsin.
I don't remember having a lot of discussion about that issue in other states. What we did discuss was, I believe,
experience in front of the federal judiciary and how it was helpful that the federal judiciary at times, who sees a lot more of these business cases, that things did seem to move a little bit quicker when the judges had familiarity with those special statutes that tend to come up a lot. And so we did discuss that, and it would be fantastic if the state courts had that same reputation of knowing those business statutes, and you would have, I think it will increase the confidence of all of the folks that are before this court, and that will be more confident in bringing cases to this in the state court system.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your presentation.
Thank you. I really appreciated the ability to be on this committee, and I appreciate the ability to talk with you briefly today.
So yeah, and we appreciate your work, all of the work you did. Attorney Weber.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Thank you for the opportunity to address you today on this petition. My name is Lucas Weber. I'm here today speaking on behalf of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, or WMC. WMC is the state's Chamber of Commerce Manufacturers Association. We are the largest business trade association in the state. We've got about 3,800 members of all sectors of the economy and all sizes throughout the state. WMC's mission is to make Wisconsin the most competitive state in the nation in which to do business. WMC has long advocated on behalf of Wisconsin's business community for a stable and predictable legal climate that produces fair and efficient fair results in an efficient and effective manner. The petition that we're talking about today proposes a pilot project that will not only enhance our state's judiciary, but also our state's economy. At a time of increasingly competitive national and international economic conditions, every step that Wisconsin can take to improve our business climate and help achieve efficiency will make us more competitive. It's important to highlight, and we can't emphasize it enough, that Wisconsin is an outlier in this area. Business courts are the norm nationwide. A majority of states, up to 31 now, have some form of this approach. And importantly, all of our neighboring states have adopted a business court. It was said that Wisconsin is the donut.
No, Wisconsin's the hole.
The hole. We are the donut.
We're not the donut.
You know, lack of such a dedicated commercial court docket here in Wisconsin does put us at a competitive disadvantage vis-a-vis our neighboring states. It has been said, you know, many members of Wisconsin's judiciary are experienced litigators. They're intimately familiar with complex business litigation. This proposal would rely on their experience and leverage it in order to achieve efficiencies and improve the administration of justice in our state.
When you say Wisconsin is competitive, you don't mean business would compete against other business. That's not what you mean by competitive. You mean draw business here.
Yeah, I think, yes.
And do any of the statistics show that businesses were drawn to these states that have business courts?
Yeah, I think you anecdotal evidence from other states show, you know, very much satisfaction with the business courts they have there.
But that's not necessarily drawing business in. That's existing.
Yeah, Justice, I can't point to a business that would say I'm not going to come to Wisconsin because you don't have a business court right now. But I can tell you that, you know, as we compete against those other states, not only keep the businesses that we have here, but to attract new businesses, this is a red flag that is out there, and it's an area that we are an outlier, and not in a good way. You know, sometimes we're a leader, sometimes we are on the cutting edge, and that's good to be an outlier in those areas. This is a place where other states have moved beyond us. They've taken the lead, and Wisconsin is playing catch up.
Have you consulted with chambers of commerce across the state? I mean, many counties have chambers of commerce on this issue.
You know, we regularly talk to them about legal climate issues generally, but not on this specific business court issue. I haven't personally, no.
No, because I knew you used to, I haven't looked at it recently, but you used to have a scorecard, and I didn't see this on the scorecard, but I haven't looked recently.
You know, the pilot project nature of this proposal is also very important. As the supporting memorandum details, an approach to business courts has been tried here in our state before. This proposal reflects specific changes meant to improve upon that prior attempt. If approved, we would expect to see additional suggestions for changes in the future. You know, this is a three-year program. We would like to hopefully come back 3 years from now and say these are ways we can improve it, make it better, and expand it. As we have seen in other states like North Carolina, beginning small and gradually expanding and improving is a prudent way forward and will ensure our commercial court docket develops into an effective and efficient tool for our state's judiciary and business litigators. You know, the Chief Justice's decision to convene a task force of experienced experts, many of whom are speaking today, has been extremely valuable. The proposal before you has been well thought out. It's carefully crafted to form a viable pilot project that will yield significantly positive results for our state. Going forward, the reporting requirements of the proposal will ensure that the court and the general public have access to the data to track the commercial court docket and figure out ways that we can improve it going forward and make sure that it is a viable tool that we can use here in Wisconsin. So thank you again for the opportunity to address you. Again, I ask that you continue to support this petition and help bring Wisconsin back into the legal mainstream. I would be happy to entertain any other questions that the court may have today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Judge Fitzpatrick.
Good morning. I'm Mike Fitzpatrick. I'm a circuit judge in Rock County. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. And I'm going to be talking about suggested guidelines for commercial court judges that we've come up with. And I was on a subcommittee with Attorney Brenner and Attorney Mike Brennan regarding that. And we were informed by the studies from other states as to what was working in terms of guidelines. We were also informed by the fact that Attorney Brenner and Attorney Brennan and I have experience in commercial litigation, not just in this state, throughout the state. But as an example, when I was in private practice, I did a fair amount of intellectual property work, including trademarks and trade secrets, and I appeared as lead counsel in state and federal courts in 22 different states. So we had that experience we could bring to this as well.
And you're so young. How did you do all of that?
I wish. And then I've had the pleasure of being a circuit judge for over 8 years now, handling a number of commercial litigation cases, including many that were trials to the court.
What number would you estimate, Judge?
That I've handled?
Yeah.
That went to trial, at least 20, including one that was a 12-day court trial in which there were cross claims and it was like six cases in one. I ended up writing a 138-page opinion.
Over how many?
I've been on the bench 8 years.
Okay, and I've forgotten, what does Rock County, is it a draw system or?
I'm on a civil rotation right now. Civil is everything that's not juvenile or criminal. It includes family law, probate, things like that.
Okay, so that would be total. So over 8 years, you had 20 such cases.
So, somewhere in that area, I'd recommend.
You said that went to trial. Were there other cases that didn't go to trial?
Sure, there were other ones that didn't go to trial. I don't know if that's typical for other counties, so I don't want to mislead you, but in answer to your question, I was happy to answer that. Mm-hmm. We've seen two areas about speed and efficiency in these cases. One has to do with discovery, and that's most important by far, but also resolving dispositive and non-dispositive motions. And we found, and we're recommending, that early and continued judicial management of discovery is important to the speed and efficiency of these cases. That's the main reason these get bogged down, and that's what increases the cost for the parties.
Okay, so now, one thing I noticed in the guidelines is very little time. It doesn't say within 5 days, within 10 days, within 60 days. So what do you do?
And that was, we did that on purpose, because we thought we want to give the judges guidelines and suggestions, but each case is going to be different. It may be after the pilot project that there will be some time deadlines that would be put in there as suggestions after the experience in our state with our unique procedures that there might be. One of the areas on discovery is electronically stored information. And this court has seen the unique procedural and cost aspects of ESI because of the Supreme Court note with 804.01, also the changes in work product under 804.01 subpart 7, and the changes in the attorney-client privilege statute 905.03 having to do with forfeiture. And if you give up something you don't mean to give up in discovery. And also, we have a unique process for ESI in the state in that before discovery of that, under Section 804.01 subpart 2E, there has to be this meeting that has to do with ESI discovery. And we've made a suggestion that the judge either at that first meeting or shortly thereafter then meet with the counsel and go through what they're going to do with ESI, because that will familiarize the judge with the case. It will facilitate resolution of any disputes regarding ESI, and it'll encourage quick action, and it'll keep the costs down in the long run. Next, we've encouraged regular conference with counsel on discovery issues and the status of the case. Will that take time for the circuit judge? Yes. However, we're convinced that it will make sure there's less obstreperous or obstinate tactics in discovery when you know you're going to be in front of the judge in 6 weeks, or we put in 3 months, I think. Also, it'll better handle specific needs of the case, and it keeps the attention of the attorneys on the case. These tend to be very busy attorneys, and they get busy on a new case. It keeps the judge, keeping them in line in one respect, in terms of keeping their eye on the ball and keeping the case moving.
Can a judge do that now?
Pardon me?
Can a judge do that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. We're recommending to do it here because of the size of these cases oftentimes and the ESI problems that you don't see in a car accident case or a typical divorce. We see different things that happen in these cases. That's why we think to keep that on them on everybody on track.
Your Honor?
Yes. I knew somebody asked a question. I didn't know who it was. Yeah.
C'est moi.
Yes.
You started at the beginning of your presentation that you're focusing on guidelines, and I see in the petition the guideline section, Section 6, and the areas under it. I have a couple of questions that arise from our staff, which deal with questions like, will the commercial court product be written orders and opinions, and what are the expectations of the pilot project with regard to decisions and orders? Will the advisory committee, does it intend to be maintained? What information is collected? And I list those questions because I'm not sure if people have designated certain areas that might be more appropriate to ask someone else.
I'd be happy to tell you what I can about those things, but I think other people are maybe – we had joked beforehand that we were going to say whoever's last got all those questions.
Okay.
But
we don't
want to do that.
I don't
want to be disrespectful to your question either.
What are the expectations for the pilot project with regard to written decisions and orders?
We would encourage that. I tend to write a lot of my decisions, even in discovery disputes. That's just what I tend to do. But we also understand that's not always possible, because there's a few counties in the state where they have staff attorneys and law clerks, but most of the circuit judges don't have that help. So, as an example, if you see something written by me, for good or bad, that's my writing. That's not somebody else. So, but we would encourage that.
And then the question continues. Many states require their business courts to produce and compile written decisions, but typically these states have added additional resources such as law clerks. And then what are the expectations for the pilot project with regard to written decisions and orders and the compilation of those written decisions and orders?
I think anybody who goes into this as a circuit judge understands this. We're not intending that this be a lesser docket that they have in terms of numbers. They understand this is going to be more work. This is evenings. This is weekends when you write something like that, because it takes time to edit that, as all of you know better than I do, of course. But as far as compiling those, Westlaw has something called trial court orders in the state. And, in fact, I know because I handle our Westlaw account in Rock County, and because I send them things on a regular basis that I write, they actually give us a little – they give that to us for free, and it usually costs something. So Westlaw will take these, and they will compile them. And they are always looking for trial court orders. And so these would be, I'm sure Westlaw, LexisNexis, whatever it might be, will take these very quickly and be happy to publish them, and those will be available then
at a charge. Available at a charge for lawyers.
It probably is. Westlaw has kind of a menu that they have in a buffet. You can buy this and buy that. But yes, but at least there would be a place where it would be available. They could be put on the state court website, I suppose. You could figure something like that with CourtNet or something. But on the other hand, if somebody's going to do it, that would work as well.
Thank you.
But I didn't mean to cut you off.
One question per person, and you handle that.
Okay, all right. Okay. My light is on.
Yeah, so. I think we will now. Thank you very, very
you
much,
very much.
Judge Fitzpatrick. We're going to move on to Mr. Crawley.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Michael Crowley. I'm very pleased to be here, as this is my first opportunity to address the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Thank you. I stand here before you representing business and as a citizen active in my community. I'm not an attorney. I'm not a judge. So I'll offer a different perspective today.
And you're not practicing law by being here, by the way.
Right. Thank you. I've lived in the city of Waukesha for the past 26 years. I proudly serve my city, county, and state in several capacities, which I'd like to mention. First, I've been employed by Midland Plastics in New Berlin, Wisconsin for over 22 years, currently serving as Vice President of Technical Services. I continue to serve as Chairman of the Community Development Block Grant Committee for the City of Waukesha for the past 18 years. I'm in my third term as a Waukesha County Board Supervisor, serving my constituents of District 16 in Waukesha County. I am a member of two of the County Board's standing committees, the Judiciary and Law Enforcement Committee, and I am Vice Chairman of the Human Resources Committee. I continue to serve as Chairman of the Waukesha County Airport Operations Commission for the past 13 years. And I am the Vice Chairman of Sewer PAC, serving on the Southeastern Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission for the past 6 years. I stand before you this morning strongly in favor of the petition to create a pilot plan for a business court docket in Wisconsin, and in particular, one with a test site in the Waukesha County Court. Why I'm in favor? Waukesha County has many businesses. In 2013, Waukesha County had more than 12,000 businesses. Businesses face challenges with which Waukesha County wants to assist. The largest employers in Waukesha County are doing business in health services, medical, product innovation, retail, wholesale and distribution, and printing. Waukesha County is home to such company headquarters as Kohl's Department Stores and Quagraphics. In many cases, these industries can relocate. The average annual wage for all industries in Waukesha County is $49,057. This betters the state average of all industry annual wages in the state of $42,792. At the same time, Waukesha County employment in manufacturing has decreased significantly over the past four decades. Most of Waukesha County's recent job growth has occurred through existing businesses expanding their operations. I personally oversaw the 40,000 square foot expansion at Midland Plastics in New Berlin in 2015, and we've added many jobs. Keeping our business in Waukesha County and growing those other businesses is critical. Waukesha County's mission statement underscores our values and our intentions. The mission of Waukesha County government is to promote the health, safety, and quality of life of the citizens while fostering an economically vibrant community. We are committed to delivering effective, high-quality programs and services in a courteous and fiscally prudent manner. In carrying out this mission and statement in the strategic plan, the Circuit Court Services Department for Waukesha County found that Waukesha County citizens, like most consumers, want a high level of service at the very low possible cost. To that end, Waukesha County citizens are very receptive to finding alternative arrangements for service deliveries by new or other means. And in connection with the courts and the challenges they face, the Circuit Court Services Department found that the courts are going to see greater complexity in cases coming to them as time goes on. A dedicated business court docket located in Waukesha County will further our county's mission statement and goals, goals which I believe the entire state shares. The primary aims of the petition is to create a specialized court calendar or docket that will move business and complex commercial cases through the court system more expeditiously. By resolving cases more quickly, there will be lower costs for litigants and the court system as well. Our Waukesha County judges will also benefit from the development of specialized judicial expertise to be shared with their judicial colleagues. Importantly, all Waukesha County residents will benefit from the creation of a more attractive and cost-effective business environment, one where business disputes can be fairly and efficiently resolved with the least amount of cost. Lastly, even non-business case dockets should benefit from the removal of time-consuming complex cases from the general docket. More than 50% of the states in this great union already have the advantage of some form of business court structure. In order to secure for their businesses, employers, and residents the benefits of having a specialized court focusing on important issues of businesses, Waukesha County very much wants to have the same advantage for its businesses. We must continue to innovate, to attract, assist, and retain our hardworking businesses that keep their headquarters in our county and the state, employ our citizens, maintain our quality of life, and pay real estate and other taxes to support our services that are provided to all. We believe that the quality of our county and judges will be an excellent platform on which this business court can test and refine this advantage for the entire state. I want to thank you for this opportunity to appear before you today, and thank you for the court's leadership to improve the quality and efficiency of our state's court system through the adoption of the Business Court Pilot Docket Program.
Mr. Crowley, I want to thank the Waukesha County Board. It has been very supportive of the court system, and it's been very supportive of creative programs to help the people who come to court in Waukesha County. So I want to say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The question I have for you, though, is were you surprised that the way of reducing cost is to educate judges? That's the only reduction of cost I've heard so far.
It could be the only cost. There may be more. Again, this is going to be a pilot program. I personally, as a resident, would support taxes that are used to educate our judicial branch. It's very important for continual education.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
President Deisinger?
Good morning, and may it please the court. I used to travel in the same commercial litigation circles as my partner Laura Brenner and Attorney Rothstein and Judge Abrahamian and Justice Kelly. But I am here today since I've been called to bar service as the president of the bar. And I want to tell you that we reported this petition to our Board of Governors in December as an informational item. We did not vote on this petition, but I can tell you that our Board of Governors received the information about the proposed new commercial case docket without any controversy. There were no criticisms suggested, and I think part of that is to remind the court of what Justice Bradley noted, one of my esteemed predecessors, Lane Ware, was in favor of an idea like this a long time ago, and it is a matter, I think, that in general our bar association and our members have been receptive to. But we did not, as a Board of Governors, take a vote on this petition. We therefore left that to our business section, and we have several representatives of our business section who are here today to report to you.
By the time it got to you, though, it was already voted on by the court, wasn't it?
Which is why
you didn't vote on it.
Chose not to vote.
I got it.
So the dots are this close?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's all I have to report.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much, and thank you for coming. Secretary Roberts.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Lon Roberts. I am presently Secretary of the Department of Financial Institutions. Practiced law in a law firm in north central Wisconsin for about 43 years, and am now experiencing some interaction with the court here, the legislature over there, and the governor downstairs. So I bring a little different perspective to this project, and I am really honored to be serving with the distinguished judiciary that's on this committee and the members of the bar who participated in this, and I thank the Chief Justice for her leadership in getting us to this point. You know, we understand that this is a competitive world, and in this particular subject matter, we have some competition. One of the great things this morning that I've seen is that it's much better for this particular kind of issue to be handled here than probably downstairs or across the hall here. The interaction that's taking place and how we can build a better pilot and build a better thing for what we call in our department, our stakeholders, clients, who have to access the court system, I think is really going to be done better here and under a pilot program than probably anything I imagined when I took the job as Secretary of the Department of Financial Institutions. So, you know, we do over there, we regulate financial institutions, and we regulate securities, we regulate credit unions, banks, and we do a variety of things that make it possible for institutions and entities to basically have the like legal status that allows them to conduct trade or business, sell goods and services, and otherwise kind of interact as they have corporate and commercial disputes with the court system. And what's really great about this particular effort is I think we're all trying to build a better product for those particular folks who happen to enter the system with a dispute and the resolution of those disputes. I could add all the things that we added that many of the other folks who have talked to you this morning about efficiency and cost, but from my perspective serving on the committee, the issues of cost and efficiency really come from our clients, the folks who are in the system. There's never been a feeling on our part that the judiciary wouldn't be able to be up to this, that the judges we have in the system wouldn't be able to be handling complex commercial litigation and do a very good job. It's an attempt to try to improve the system, I think, that you all are engaged in that allows those clients to say, you know, we've saved cost for us as clients. Because we can, if you think about it, in my prior life, sitting in a boardroom with governance or senior management, these folks think of time as being money, delay being more money, and this is an attempt, I think, by the judiciary to be responsive to those kinds of issues. With respect to the fact that as you build a pilot, as you have experience, you're going to be able to find the kind of talent that will be interested in this, not to exclude somebody who isn't. I think those comments are well taken. So, again, in my present job, I try to be out and about in the state trying to promote what we think is a better place to do business. We think that this is just another tool in a toolbox which will allow business to maybe be retained here, maybe be attracted, and to be a better place for business to be conducted. And if that happens, we think that's just another added benefit to all of us as citizens. We have more economic activity and a more prosperous.
So do you think the banks should be added?
Excuse me?
Do you think the banks should be added?
Yes.
And what about insurance companies?
From the executive's point of view, if I can speak for the executive branch, I think it would be what the court thinks would be the most appropriate way to measure the pilot. We, as on the committee, picked and chose, and we thought, I think somebody else said, we weren't excluding financial institutions by the definition of business organizations. And if the court feels that insurance would be another way to test this pilot and see how it works, I think.
Well, what do you think? Aren't they in your, I guess there's a special insurance department.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I would leave that to the Commissioner of Insurance.
That sounds like a very adroit answer. Mr. Secretary, I have a battery of tough questions to ask you, but I'll forgo those in the interest
Thank
of
you.
Time and just say welcome to the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
It's a pleasure to be here this morning. I've avoided it for 43 years.
I was going to ask you if this was your first appearance.
Other than being sworn in, this is my first appearance.
Well, that's just wonderful.
That's why I'm so honored to be on this distinguished panel.
Listen, you've been so smart and so intelligent for years. You come to appear on a matter that's already been decided, and I think you're going to prevail.
He was on the committee as well.
Were you a partner of Attorney Bradley?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That
I
Bradley.
Just wanted that
Not
on
that
the
Bradley.
Record.
That's right. I happen to be very, very prejudiced in favor of this gentleman who's extraordinary. How's that? May the record reflect.
You wouldn't have waited 43 years if you knew you were going to get all these kind of kadoos,
right? That's true.
It's not always that way.
Yes.
I appreciate your indulgence for somebody who's spent his life in the office and in boardrooms. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming, and thank you for your work on the committee. Attorney Brotherhood.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Randy Brotherhood, and I am the chair of the business law section of the State Bar of Wisconsin. I'm also a shareholder in the Milwaukee law firm of Meissner, Tierney, Fisher & Nichols, where I practice in, primarily in the areas of acquisitions and corporate governance matters. As a transaction lawyer, I can assure you that I've not been before this court before. I am here this morning not as a member of the advisory committee, but on behalf of the business law section's board of directors to support the petition to create the pilot program. The business law section's board of directors is comprised of roughly 16 attorneys from across the state who bring to the board a wide range of business law experiences and perspectives. They are drawn from large and small private practices, from government, from law school faculties, and from corporate legal departments. The business law section board's interest in the commercial docket was has been, to my knowledge, longstanding, dating back to well before the 8 or so years that I've been on the board. The issue is most recently prompted in 2013 when representatives of the state bar and our business law section met with the governor's office to discuss the possibility of establishing business courts in Wisconsin. And not long thereafter, I believe in early 2015, the State Bar forwarded to our board for review a preliminary Legislative Reference Bureau draft of a proposed bill that would designate certain circuit court branches in Wisconsin as business courts. And as we looked at that preliminary bill draft as part of a package of recommended statute and administrative law changes that we were putting together under the rubric of improving Wisconsin's business climate, we took a great interest in this idea. Although the bill draft I referred to, as far as I know, never went beyond the preliminary discussion draft stage, it began an ongoing discussion on the part of our board last year about the potential benefits of specialized commercial court dockets in Wisconsin. The business climate package that our board was working on was ultimately finalized and turned into legislation and administrative rules, but we were still looking for a way to further evaluate the notion of commercial dockets when we became aware that Chief Justice Rogenczak had established the Business Court Advisory Committee to explore the notion of this pilot project, and that led to our contacting the committee's chair, John Rothstein, so that we could lend our board support to the committee's efforts, and John was gracious in allowing us to informally provide our input, thus leading to my being here today on behalf of the business law section. So I'm here today to affirm the business law section board's unanimous support for the committee's petition to create the pilot project, and to affirm the business law section board stands willing to do whatever it can to help facilitate the project. I would say that
counsel,
the key driver
counsel,
of our
counsel,
I'm sorry.
Do you favor law clerks for the judges?
Law clerks for judges?
Yeah. That are going to serve on this as business judges.
Clerks to serve as business judges?
For law clerks for judges.
I
who serve on this court.
I don't think so.
You don't favor that. Okay.
It would seem to me that there needs to be a requisite level of expertise and training and education.
You're hearing her question differently than she means it. Maybe it's because we're sitting so close to each other, we're kindred spirits now. But she, I think, is asking you if you favor law clerks to serve the judges.
Oh,
the judges,
yes.
Who sit as judges.
Yes, of course, yes.
You favor that. Okay, that's an expense. What about special masters for discovery issues?
Yes, I think that would be a good idea. I'm not a litigator, and I don't have any particular experience with it, but...
Well, I assume that the documents you draft in mergers and acquisitions sometimes create litigation.
Right.
So you probably have seen litigation.
Right.
From that end.
Yes.
So that's an issue.
Yes.
What about publication of the trial court decisions?
Well, lawyers such as myself are always looking for guidance with respect to how we might predict how judges will make decisions. So as a whole, I view the notion of written decisions in a business court context in particular to be a favorable thing.
Mm-hmm. Does your firm now keep, or people in the business law section, keep records of trial court decisions?
We do. Mm-hmm. We do. Mm-hmm. Best we can.
No, I understand that. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. I would say that the key driver of our board's interest in the pilot project is that we believe, as I previously mentioned, that the commercial course docket would have a positive effect on Wisconsin's business climate and be a positive factor in encouraging entrepreneurs to locate their businesses here. In this regard, we noted that the specialized commercial dockets have been implemented in more than half the states, as has been previously mentioned, including several states neighboring Wisconsin, with which Wisconsin competes for business startups and mature businesses looking to relocate. Our board also considers it noteworthy that the American Bar Association section of business law endorsed the notion of specialized business courts and commercial court dockets as far back as 20 years ago, were further influenced by the fact that among the other expressions of support that we have seen for the pilot project, at least 20 Wisconsin organizations representing a wide variety of industries have lent their voices in support of the pilot project. So to the extent that there is concern about a lack of data regarding how a commercial court docket might work in Wisconsin, the Business Law Section Board considers it noteworthy that this is a pilot project and would establish business courts on only a limited basis for a limited period in order to allow the for the gathering of data and a reasonable period for evaluation so that the advisability of adopting a commercial case docket as a permanent feature of the court system can be determined. Our board's support of the pilot project is based on several beliefs drawn from our review of pertinent information. We believe that judges will benefit from the development of specialized judicial expertise to be shared with their judicial colleagues. We also believe that the court system will overall benefit from business case dockets by removing time-consuming complex business cases from the court's general case dockets. And we believe that Wisconsin businesses will benefit in that complex commercial litigation can be moved to the court system more expeditiously and hopefully at a lower cost. So in closing, I want to reiterate the State Bar Business Law Section's support for the pilot project, and I thank you for the opportunity to appear here today and for the court's leadership in improving Wisconsin's business climate through the adoption of this pilot program. Thank
very
you
good.
Very much.
Thank you so much. Attorney Murphy?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Brick Murphy. I am also a member of the Business Law Section Board of Directors of the state of Wisconsin. I'm a practicing attorney in Green Bay, Wisconsin, where I've practiced my entire career at the Conway, Olenichek, and Jerry law firm. I started my involvement in this process back in July when at the State Bar's annual conference, the business law section set up a committee to study and hopefully reignite legislative efforts to set up a business court program. Well, our committee did so well that we ended up here and didn't have to do any of the work. But and all kidding aside, we quickly pivoted our efforts away from the legislative side and partnered with the Business Court Advisory Committee. John Rothstein allowed me to participate in the deliberations, which took place last fall and even into preparing for this hearing this morning. And through my involvement in that committee, my support and endorsement, and frankly, the business law section's support and endorsement of this program is only strengthened. I'll keep my comments brief, but I do want to focus on one aspect of the pilot program that's very important to me in particular in our firm, is that the 8th Judicial District is in Green Bay and includes seven different counties of very different sizes. You've got Brown County with eight judges, all the way down to Kewaunee, which has one judge. The diversity that we will get from this pilot program in the next 3 years will give us the empirical and anecdotal data to see whether this is a great program for Wisconsin. I think this platform in the way the court can evaluate and improve the program will be tremendous. And certainly the business law section will be active. Our work doesn't end today. Our work will continue as we help evaluate the program and lend any help or assistance the court or the pilot program desires.
I'm sure that we will be contacting the state bar to assist us in evaluating this program as we go along. I know Attorney Rothstein and I have had some conversations about that, as I have with President Eisinger. And the state bar has always been so helpful to this court, so you can be sure you will be hearing
from
the court.
You will take us up on that offer.
You bet.
Counsel, that may have been the answer to my a question that I had. I wasn't going to ask it of you. I was going to ask it of someone else. But the question is, who's going to be responsible for monitoring the pilot project? Do you have any additional thing to say other than your response?
Well, I do know that a letter that I believe was submitted to the court by the Business Court Advisory Committee from 20 different business constituents indicated that they were, not only did they support the program, but they would carefully consider and support some type of funding for it. So I think there that type of funding would be out there, and that's something that the business law section would help make happen.
I'm not. Thank you. I'm taken aback, how much? I guess. Who will be responsible for monitoring the pilot project? Do you have any additional input in that in response to that question?
I believe that the court is going to be the main monitor, as well as the circuit court system. Attorney Rothstein might have a better answer
okay.
for
I'll
me.
I'll save that for him then. Thank
okay.
you.
I have a question, counsel. Green Bay has a very active Chamber of Commerce on which the lawyers served, and I've appeared before them a number of times. Have you discussed this with them?
Not with the full formal chamber. I have discussed it with two in-house counsel that are part of the chamber. And I've also discussed it, Justice Abrahamson, with several judges in Brown County.
Mm-hmm. And their view? We haven't heard from any judges.
Very strong support.
Good.
Judge Zeidwalder, Judge Hammer, who used to be a business law professor actually at St. Norbert's, are both in support of it.
I don't have a copy of the letter from the Business Advisory Committee. What is that about?
The letter I was referring to was a letter that Attorney Rothstein, do you want to speak to that letter?
That's fine. We're going to have you come up to the microphone,
right.
Attorney Rothstein, if you're going to respond to that question. But why don't you hold the question, and I'm going to let you conclude after everyone is done. So just make a note, and you can answer that when you come up.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
One other important note I want to make about northeastern Wisconsin, and really Green Bay in particular, is that we had a federal court that opened up in our city, I think, 8 years ago, and there were certainly concerns that Judge Griesbach wouldn't be busy. Well, that's been a smashing success. We feel that it's helped attract new businesses. I can't name one for you, but certainly Judge Griesbach has been very busy, and now they're now talking about possibly a second judge at the federal court. So certainly the 8th Judicial District has the businesses and the disputes that are important that this type of court will well handle and manage.
Do you have an estimate of the number of cases that fit into this list presently?
I do not. In
Brown County?
I do not.
Wild ballpark estimate.
Boy, that would be too much of a guess for a business law guy that barely gets into the courtroom.
Yeah. Thank you very
That's
much.
That's my point. Okay,
thank you. Have you concluded what you came to tell us? Because
yes,
your light has been turned out by our marshals. So.
In summary, I just want to say that the business law section's support of this has only grown through my participation in the proceedings. While northeastern Wisconsin cannot attract businesses by saying we have a Whole Foods, we can now say we have a dedicated business court docket.
Thank
you for the opportunity to speak this morning.
Good. Thank you very much for coming to, and thank you for your participation with the committee. Judge Morrison.
Thank you, and if it please the court, other than the several dozen times as the chair of the Board of Bar Examiners that I moved admissions to the bar and that when I moved my wife's admission, this is the first time I appeared before the Supreme Court as well.
Wow.
And it's nice to appear when the vote's already been taken. That's a unique experience.
Can I ask you a practical question?
Sure.
In the other states that have business courts, do they also have the right to substitute? And the second part of that is, regardless of whether they do, how do you anticipate that working here?
Okay, Justice Ziegler, some states do, some states don't. I can't give you a breakdown.
Okay.
The intention here is that there will be at least two judges that will be designated as business court judges in either of these pilot places. So if Judge Ziegler is one of the judges and Judge Bradley is the other and you get subbed, it'll go to Judge Bradley. That's our intention with respect to that.
That's Waukesha County you want, too. What about the other counties?
Well, in District 8, we will have at least two judges that will be designated, perhaps more. If I might, I want to just thank the court for the opportunity to serve on this committee, the Chief Justice in particular. When I was appointed to the bench 5 years ago, if I had any idea how much fun this job was going to be, I would have done it years and years before. It has just been great. And
let me interject. I don't want to stop your euphoria, but this question.
I thought I was going to get the Lon Roberts.
Lon Roberts, very, very special.
That's true.
Let the record reflect. One of the questions that was raised in Judge Stark's letter addressed this issue of substitution, and you indicate that you have two judges available in the 8th District and two in also Waukesha, but she inquires about what's anticipated, and you're the perfect person to ask this question, of what happens in these multi-party litigations. You know, we were just told about one in Barron County with 100 attorneys, and of course that's true, and Green Bay has had some really large ones recently. What happens when the two of you get substituted on?
Then Judge Abrahamian's going to get the job, I think.
Okay.
This
is a question that Judge Stark raised, and so
right. You
may not have the answer now, but I'm saying to you, someone should be thinking about this because there is a right of substitution, of course, and how that plays out. And she specifically asks how it plays out in terms of the inter-county, Waukesha, two judges, two District 8, whatever the number is, because it is not unforeseeable that with these large number of parties and complex litigation, and that's your bailiwick, right, complex litigation,
right. That
they're going to go through the two judges in some cases.
Well, that's certainly true, Justice.
With great dispatch. So how do you see that unfolding, or what considerations do you think you have to examine to further that inquiry?
Well, you're tired of hearing this, I'm sure. It's a pilot project, and a lot of these things have to be worked out, of course. But that's not a cop-out. There will be a sufficient number of judges named that if we run out of judges, if we have three judges in the 8th District and we're all conflicted out for some reason or another, there will be at least two in Waukesha, and in that rare case, they may have to come up and do it, if that's the case.
Another area that you just touched upon in your response when you said named, Judge Stark mentioned the possibility of judges applying. There'd be an application process so that, and that touches upon a little bit of the morale of the judges, that people that might want an opportunity are not excluded. What do you think about that?
Well, let me address that, Justice, if I might. I spoke to every judge in the 8th District when this arose, and I told them what we were planning to do, and I asked for interest. I have interest from 5 or 6 of the judges in the 8th District. I had a number of the judges say, I'm glad somebody else is doing it. It's not my bailiwick. I don't care. And many are neutral towards it. It's very important that all the judges feel included.
Yes.
And that also gives me the opportunity to comment on one other thing was raised, I think, by Justice Abramson about the training of the judges. Justice Gableman, through his efforts, had Justice Abrahamian and I invited to the national meeting of the business court judges
in Atlanta, entirely funded by American University. I think we had to pay our meals, but they paid everything else. And we had an opportunity to spend 3 days with business court judges from all over the country. Tremendous education, tremendous resources available to us at no cost to our state. And I suggest there are a number of those kinds of opportunities for judges who don't have experience or who have experience and want to hone that experience to be able to do that.
I'm very concerned about the morale of our judges, as all of us are. And I think it's important that people who have an interest, whose resume may not quite fit the bill, so to speak, but have a lot of interest, that they not be excluded, that they be given the opportunity for that kind of
Justice Crowley, I totally agree with you. And that's why I spoke to every judge in our district, because some people just want to be asked. Others have a significant interest in it. Others, not any interest at all. But the mere process of asking them will foster inclusion. And we're going to learn. We have some candidates we didn't know about.
Except perhaps a more formal application process. Think about that. That's what
Judge says. Of course. Rearranging the deck chairs a bit, but obviously we want to be as open to these kinds of changes as we can.
Would you limit it to 8th district judges?
Pardon me?
Would you limit it to 8th district judges?
You mean would we accept somebody from the 9th or somewhere else? Well, it's a pilot project again. That's not a cop-out. I think we're going to be open to doing what works, Justice. Mm-hmm. And whatever makes sense and what works. If we have a tremendously talented judge in Shawano who's willing to do the work and we need that help, why in the world wouldn't we include that person from Shawano right next to our district? Geography is always going to be an issue. And that's one of the reasons why it's important that we do this dual pilot project, one in Waukesha and one in our district. It's a diverse district. It has Green Bay and Appleton. It has Marinette. We have complex business disputes in Marinette. I've had several myself since I've been on the bench. But this will teach us how to scale this up and how to expand it across the state, because there's going to be enough diversity in this to be able to do that. Thank you very much. I do want to say that this committee has been absolutely spectacular. The work that they did was incredible. The dedication they brought to it and the leadership from John Rothstein, it was fantastic. And I thank all of the court for giving us the opportunity, and I thank John and all of our colleagues for the leadership. It has been a great experience.
Judge, you're a chief judge, and this notice went out to the chief judges, but we didn't get any response from the chief judges about this.
I'm sorry, to what, Justice Abrams?
All the chief judges of the districts.
What were they asked?
Well, they got a notice of this hearing.
Oh, this hearing today? Yeah. I got the notice, but I knew I was coming.
I know, but ordinarily, a petition is brought to the chief judges for their comments and for any changes they wanted. Was this vetted through the chief judges?
I don't know. You folks know the progeny of this better than I do, Justice Abrams.
At the moment, I'm not interested in the progeny. I'm interested in was this taken to the chief judges, and did you get their comments? And I think the answer is no, because I didn't see it on any of their minutes, and we don't have a letter. And you have been a chief judge since?
Last August. I'm a rookie.
Okay.
Right.
But this was, when was this completed, this petition?
I think the petition was approved in...
It was filed at the end of September, and the court approved it in October.
Okay, so you
might have been
chief,
the end of October.
I know that the chiefs have discussed it informally. I know no formal action has been
okay.
taken.
Okay, that's what
that
I
know
think.
For sure.
Okay, very good.
There's
Thank
a long
so
list
much.
Of who has provided notice.
Right.
Not
right.
to
they,
say that
they
it was
got
limited.
Notice.
Trial judges.
Attorney Rothstein, if you could come back. I know there were a couple of questions that you took notes on to answer that I referred to, and then... Anything else that you want to say after hearing the questions and the responses that you think would help the court?
I'll try to follow up on some of the questions that were asked. And I told everyone that to the extent you have any question you can't answer, send it to me. I get the responsibility. With respect to the request by the Wisconsin Bankers Association to be included, we support that. There was no intention to exclude banks. We frankly thought they were included, but to the extent this makes them more comfortable, it's fine. Two distinctions. They also suggested maybe Dane County should be suggested as a third spot. We leave that in the hands of the court. The committee felt after much deliberation that we had two good sites to get the sort of data that would be necessary and helpful. We leave it in the court's hands if the court wants to extend it. Next, with respect to the Bankers Association, they also suggested an inclusion of not only officers, directors, et cetera, they included employees. That one we differ on only in the sense that we wanted to distinguish that this is a court for business issues. We do not want this to be confused. Now we have an individual fight and an employee. So on that one, we would differ with them. But the rest of their comments were fine. Also, with respect to the Legislative Reference Bureau, it had a number of technical corrections, et cetera. We adopt those all. We defer to their expertise. We are also asked, a question came up about with Brick Murphy's presentation about a letter. That letter is in tab 7 of the court's material. It's a letter signed by 20 different business institutions, associations, illustrating broad-scale support for the petition. It's tab number 7.
It's your letter.
It's immediately behind my letter.
Okay. And my question to you is this, when they say support, the statement was that that they want to give money. Is that true?
I did not see any money being offered.
I didn't see any money either.
All right. Next is somebody asked about how your experience has been in other states. I've had the advantage
in fact, I'm sorry. This was if we're referring to the letter to the governor, is that what you're referring
that
to?
That is it.
It says, Justice Dear Governor Walker, we are writing to request your support for including additional funding for judicial pay.
True. Next paragraph.
Compensation. As you know, business needs a stable, predictable legal climate. And they thank the governor. This is a letter to the governor. Our organization believes that competent and highly skilled judges, and that's why we want more pay, are a key ingredient, okay? And then Wisconsin is more likely to attract it because of compensation. And then it says in the last paragraphs, we also support the business court pilot project that is currently under development through the leadership of Chief Justice Patience Robinsack, as proposed in Rule 1605. We believe that a business court with specialized competencies in this area will save time and resources, and that's what I've been asking you about, and that's to educate the judges. In order to attract attorneys with requisite business law expertise for the business court, Wisconsin must be able to offer competitive compensation. An increase in judicial pay will assist in this regard. That's the letter we're talking about?
That's okay. It, Your Honor.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In conclusion, unless there's additional... Yes,
there was the question about monitoring. Who do you anticipate is going to monitor?
What we had suggested is twofold. One, the director of state courts. They already collect information as it's required. And this was a learning process for me. It was a fast learning process. I also understand that each judicial district has a district, it's a DCA?
District Court Administrator,
that they also have as one of their tasks the collection of data.
Collection is one thing, but, you know, monitoring may be something different.
Justice Bradley, what I foresee is that those are the two sources of collecting the raw data. In terms of analyzing the data, we hadn't been asked, the Business Advisory Committee, to do that, and I would have to re-ask all again, and I wanted to compliment them. The amount of work that went in a very short period of time to get this done in a fashion that was really well thought out, well constructed, was remarkable. And I salute them all because they had to make time in their schedules to do that. But back to your question, whether it's the state bar through the business law section, which I would foresee using their expertise and their interest, and whether another group like ours or the same group or some other group amended, something to assist this court. I can tell you I'm committed to providing whatever assistance I can.
It seems to me, and one of the things commented on, I guess, from staff's memo, was this question of who's going to monitor it. And as I say, collecting of data is one thing, but monitoring it and adjusting and evaluating this from a larger perspective, do you anticipate your committee continuing?
The committee commitments that I had were to get this petition and to present it to the court. Mm-hmm. And again, I thank them for all doing that. I think it'd have to be a new ask. When I received the ask, I got a call from on my phone, the Chief Justice, and she said, would you do this? And I said, when the Chief Justice calls you on the phone, you say yes. So I would hope that, again, I think you've seen today great support among the bar for this program. And I think if the ask is made, you'll be able to get the sort of assistance to help monitor. And I would point, again, collecting data. By the state director of courts, the district court administrators, the Wisconsin State Bar Business Law Section, as well as those who you may choose to ask.
Very good. Thank you. And thank you for all the work that you did. I know that I gave you a very short, compressed time frame, and I thank every single person I asked to serve on the committee said yes. So it's the first committee I ever set up, but boy, I was really encouraged by the response. So thank you so very much. We will take this up again at our Open Administrative Conference. I am going to conclude this hearing, but I'm not going to give my colleagues a break. I'm going to ask for their forbearance because Jacqueline Rothstein is here on the next rule, and she is the only speaker. So thank you very much, and thank you all for coming and participating. Always a big help to the
committee. You are welcome on behalf of the committee. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have my file. I didn't know we were going to be not taking a break. So
maybe you can get Tina to take it, Jack.
And I might, you know, conditional, this is not going to be all that quick, Jack.
Well, we're going to give it a shot, Kim. We got 15
got
minutes, so we're
going to
give it a shot.
Okay.
You always do. You always do.
Well, that's because conditional admission is a hot issue.
Okay, and that's fine. That's fine. Perhaps Tina can get your file for you. You can put the podium down a little bit, Jacqueline. I think it's a little tall for you. It's on the right-hand side underneath.
Start with that, Jim.
Okay. Yep. We are ready when you are ready.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of pending Supreme Court Rule Petition 1603 regarding conditional admission. As many of you know, conditional admission took effect in June of 2011. That provision allows individuals who have a record of conduct that demonstrates documented ongoing recovery and the ability to meet the competence as well as the character and fitness requirements to be considered for conditional admission. As part of a conditional admission agreement, the Board of Bar Examiners may impose reasonable conditions for up to 60 months with the possibility of an extension not to exceed 1 year. Those conditions may address an applicant's individual circumstances, including but not limited to requiring medical, psychological, or other treatment, a prohibition on the use of alcohol or other drugs, random or other drug testing, supervision, or even financial, business, or law office management counseling. Since June of 2011, there have been 34 individuals who have been conditionally admitted. Of those 34, thus far, 17 have successfully completed it and are now admitted without any conditions. However, we have had a handful of individuals who have become noncompliant with their conditions. In those instances, the board has voted to revoke their conditional admission agreements and then has taken the additional step of seeking to have their licenses suspended and/or revoked. To accomplish that end, the board has filed an order to show cause and a motion seeking the license suspension of those who were placed on conditional admission with the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Of the four instances in which the board has filed those actions, it has prevailed in three of them. Although this is the approach the board has taken, the existing rule does not contain a process by which an attorney's noncompliance with conditional admission should be addressed once the board has voted to revoke the underlying conditional admission agreement. The proposed revision is structured so that the court may consider the matter on written filings, but preserves the option of appointing a referee in the event there are factual issues to be resolved. Additionally, the current rule does not contain a clear means for those attorneys who are interested in becoming reinstated after they have been suspended or revoked by the court for failing to comply with their conditional admission. This petition also includes a mechanism to address that matter, namely that the attorney may seek reinstatement through the Office of Lawyer Regulation using the formal reinstatement procedure found in SCR 22.29, regardless of the length of any suspension or in the event of revocation. Therefore, if the court decides to revoke a conditionally admitted attorney's license to practice law, that attorney may petition for reinstatement 5 years after the date of the revocation. The Office of Lawyer Regulation is in support of this amendment, as is the State Bar of Wisconsin.
So it doesn't come to you, it comes to OLR to get back in?
That's correct.
A suspension, too?
That's correct.
A suspension for 1 month goes to OLR?
Correct.
And what do you have to follow if you have a suspension of 1 month? Do you have to follow the rules for getting back in if you're suspended for 6 months? Well, it's not clear here.
Presumably you would have to, certainly.
You know, there are two different procedures if you're suspended for less than 6 months or 6 months or more, right?
Correct.
So I'm to get using the suspension for 1 month.
I mean, it is theoretically possible that there could be a one-month suspension, although I don't know how realistic that would actually
what
be.
What about a six-month suspension?
That would still go through OLR.
But, I mean, why is 1 month not realistic and 6 months realistic? What about 3 months?
Based on my experience with this court and your actions so far, you haven't ever issued an order of that short duration.
Well, we have in OLR matters. We do in OLR matters quite frequently.
I think that...
We don't do 1 month suspensions.
No, but we do three.
I think that... So typically... Let me try and answer it this way. If these cases would most likely come before you after somebody who failed their conditional agreement was also under an agreement with the WISLAP, with the Wisconsin Lawyers Assistance Program. And in those cases, the Wisconsin Lawyers Assistance Program allows individuals to get back into compliance. So they put them on notice and they say, listen, Attorney Smith, you have not been compliant, and we expect you to become compliant within the next 30 days. And if you don't, we're going to refer your matter back to the Board of Bar Examiners for action.
I understand.
And so my guess is that it would be unlikely that this court would then only extend a suspension to 1 month, because that attorney would likely have been given an opportunity.
It's you who are going to do that. Upon the board's decision to revoke or suspend, this is 7M. So on the board's decision to revoke or suspend a conditional admission agreement, the board files a motion here requesting the court to order the conditionally admitted lawyer to show cause why the license should not be revoked or suspended. So WISLAP gives a warning. The guy doesn't shape up. It goes to the board. The board makes a decision to suspend.
That's what the board says here. Okay, the board would make the decision to revoke the conditional admission agreement.
Right. Well, it says revoke or suspend a conditional admission agreement. That's what it says. I'm only reading what it says.
I think what she's focusing on, Justice Abrahamson, is this petition focuses on DBE is going to look at the agreement, whether the license is taken away after the agreement is revoked is what you are expecting OLR to deal with. Is that correct?
To act on the revocation and or
right.
the suspension.
Or the suspension. That's right.
Right.
Yes. That's right.
All you can do is say that's what you want to do, but in order to revoke or suspend the agreement, or which in effect is a revocation of a license to practice law, that you've got to come here. Under 7, you talk about the board may modify, extend, or revoke the conditional admission agreement. It doesn't say suspend in 7, so I just have a disconnect in here. And we've been, as I understand this, Ms. Fox, we have in effect been doing an order to show cause. It's not in the rules, but we have been doing it. And what you're doing here is bringing the rules up to date with what the court's practice is. So it's going a little further, but that's what it in essence is doing. So when I read, and we've got your petition, and it's it's underlined to show what's and deletions, so with the changes. So it's 7M and 9H regarding the confidentiality. So, and then you got 12 on reinstatement. So that's what I've been focusing on, and I've been trying to fit it. I think what the court has been doing has been working well. But I think this adds things, and I just don't understand it. That's all. Not that I'm opposed or in favor. I don't understand it. I'm looking at 7. A conditionally admitted lawyer's license is expressly conditioned on compliance with the agreement. Okay. I think that makes sense to me. If the board, that's BBE, right, determines that a conditionally admitted lawyer has failed to fulfill the terms, the board may modify, extend, or revoke the conditional admission. Now, your revocation doesn't end it, right? You have to go to court, right?
Correct.
Right. All right. So how do you modify the conditional agreement, and how do you extend it? I know how you want to revoke it. You're out for 5 years, and you mean revoke the way it's used in OLR. Is that right? 5 years is a revocation?
When we refer to revoke on our end,
right,
we are simply saying you're done, you're finished.
Right.
We don't apply in our thinking that would be a permanent revocation. Mm-hmm. Once you're done with us, you're done. And then we ask this court to address the license.
That's right. Okay. So now you have revoked the agreement. Now you come to court and you're going to ask for revocation of the license.
Correct.
Will you ask for suspension of the license when you revoke the agreement?
I think our motions have typically said revoke and or suspend, and we allow a determination to be made by this court.
So why would you do why would you say modify, extend, or revoke? What difference does it make? If you say revoke the agreement and we say suspend for 6 months, what does that mean?
Well, that means that the person would no longer have a conditional admission agreement with our office.
You're done.
We're done.
Exactly.
And then the license issue would still be before this court for determination.
That's why if it's 6 months or over 6 months, it's determined solely by the OLR and the rules applying to OLR.
Yes.
Can't come back to you.
Nope.
As in a conditional agreement.
Correct.
You're gone.
Correct.
Ms. Rostin, you sit on the committee that the court set up to review OLR procedures and so forth. Is there any benefit to the courts putting your petition on hold until that committee gets done with what it's doing and are just going along with our sort of non-written down rules that we do in order to show cause? I don't know how this fits into what they're considering, because I've totally stayed away from the committee so they could do what they wanted to do, but I'm wondering about our setting up yet another process that is going to impact on OLR's operation when we've set a committee up to advise the court what should get changed, what should we do. I don't know how this may fit in with their discussions. Can you give us any ideas about that? Should we hold it, or have they talked about this, or what do you think of that?
They have not talked about this. I don't anticipate that they necessarily would. I don't know that there's any inherent advantage to holding this for the full committee's review. That the larger committee is about to split into subcommittees. As of this past week, last week we met, and that was the determination made then. And I don't necessarily think that any of this would neatly fit into one of those subcommittees such that it would be necessary to hold it for that purpose.
Okay, thank you.
Well, the court's meeting with the component parts, and part of the agenda is the committee, so we may hear more about that.
Yes. And to your point, Justice Abrahamson, though, under 7M, you are correct. It does say the board's decision to revoke or suspend.
An agreement.
Pardon me? An agreement. And upon reflection, I think we could remove the or suspend portion.
Why?
Well, because we don't
suspend the agreement.
We don't suspend them. We revoke them.
It's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. It's totally gone. What about modify or extend, which is in 7?
Those I think should remain, because we do want that ability. We don't want to change that. That is not something we're interested in changing.
I have although you added it here, as I understand it, but although what's crossed out talks about modifying. What if the applicant, the lawyer, doesn't want to modify or extend? You know, if it's revoked, then you come to 7M and you get to the court. So where do you go if the lawyer doesn't want to modify the agreement or extend the agreement from, you may have the agreement for 3 years and now you want to modify it because there's been some violation, to 4 years, where are his rights to appeal? I just didn't look it up, that's all. I wanted to know.
If the lawyer is unwilling to have an extension or a modification.
Yeah, right. Says, and listen, if the board... I've had enough of you guys already. I've been good. Okay, I had a minor problem. I confess I had a minor problem, but that doesn't work extending it another year or modifying it to whatever it is, X, Y, Z.
I think at that point, the board would have two choices. One would be to agree with that attorney and not continue an extension. Or alternatively, the board could revisit it and determine whether or not revoking the agreement was a better option, in which case it would come to this court as a next step.
But you really don't think it should be you don't think it should be revoked, but you think it should be modified. I want to know if the person has some recourse. That's all. A simple question.
Not really.
Okay.
The current rule allows for that.
What does it allow?
It allows for a modification or an extension.
Okay. And no recourse. Okay.
That's correct. Not once you're in conditional admission.
Okay, if I may. I'm strongly
in favor of conditional admission. I am also disagree with the comment that it's been working well. It may have been working well for, let me say this, disagree with the comment that it's been working well for this court. That was the comment made. And we need look no further than when, even from the outside, with all the different machinations that were going on, the very first case we had was someone who was signed up but not willing to comply with the conditions and wanted review here, and then wanted review here again, and then wanted review here again. By here, I mean with our court. Okay, so we had problems with it from this side, maybe not from your side, from the get-go. And one of the problems that has furthered in my mind, when this conditional admission was presented to the court, and it's been a long time in coming, it was passed with the understanding that conditional admission was a privilege, and that if you violated and flunked conditional admission, that was it. And what has snuck in here, in my opinion, is one of the things that was just touched upon, the word suspended. We never intended. Now, we have a new court here, and so not everyone who voted previously is here. But we never intended, and Justice Prosser, by the way, is a strong advocate on this, we never intended that after you've been given this chance, that then you're going to get, frankly, another chance. That was it. So it was, as was referred to earlier, it could be modified, extended, or revoked. But we didn't intend at that time, and the hearing will reflect, that suspension of license was going to be an option. And if you look at what we've been doing most recently, and I understand this petition is to reflect what we've been doing recently, what the court has been doing, I refer to the — can I refer to this stuff in public?
What are you talking about?
The ones that are published.
If they're published, but if they're not, you cannot.
Let me just think, are these published or are these just in there's always been a question with regard to confidentiality here and seal and the tension between confidentiality and the protection of the public, and I can't remember where we are right now on this with regard to the
you're going
to
reference the first one?
Well, yeah, no, I want that one out right now. Are our opinions, for instance, if I had one that was issued in November of 2015, and I'll just make up the alphabet because I don't know the answer, Board of Bar Examiners versus ABC, is that published right now or is that just in the clerk's office?
One order says that with the exception of this order, all filings remain confidential.
Yes, that's why I'm asking.
Well, order.
Let's not use the names of anything and just talk about
okay.
The concept.
Well, it's just initials anyway. In the one that was issued on November 16th, 2015,
right.
This is what we said, that the attorney's argument ignores the fact that his license to practice law was conditional. He failed to abide by the required conditions. Failure to comply with the terms of his conditional admission warrants revocation of the consent agreement to conditional admission. Therefore, his license to practice, attorney Cornelius is not licensed to practice law in Wisconsin. It is ordered. Oops, excuse me. It is ordered that the Board of Bar Examiners' motion is granted and admission is revoked and that attorney is no longer licensed to practice law in Wisconsin. None of this suspension, from my point of view, nonsense. But it's crept in and we never intended when we passed it. Now, again, different members of the court, this is what we've been doing I think we've had two revocations. I think an earlier one we didn't pause, and we may have done a suspension. But so I'm concerned that this petition doesn't reflect the initial intent of what the court when passed it, that was set forth on the record, and it doesn't reflect what's been going on recently.
Well, let me just
strong words to follow.
Say to you that the stuff we've got in our binders shows a number 2012XX something or other. XX means it's not in the public domain. It's on the court intranet. That's the,
the meaning of the XX. From the outset, from the get-go, we've struggled with confidentiality versus protection of the public, and we've had to struggle with that issue, and I just didn't recall where we landed at this moment. So that's my concern. I don't know how suspended got in here.
Well, I think, Attorney Rothstein, you're not opposed to our taking the word suspended out of 7M.
But it isn't.
And the other place that they it appears is in section 9H. And if we remove those two, perhaps that would help Justice Bradley's concern. Is there any reason not to take those out?
There would be no reason.
Does that then, I don't have that H right in front of me, mm-hmm. does that then eliminate suspension
as an option?
Does.
It's 9 is confidentiality. Additional admission and the agreement are confidential, won't be disclosed except to the OLR or in any of the following circumstance. And as circumstances where confidentiality no longer applies is when the court issues an order revoking or suspending a conditionally admitted lawyer for failure to fulfill the term. I think it means terms there. I think that's a typographical error. The terms of a conditional admission agreement. So it's not clear. You see where we are? I am.
I do.
And it should be terms.
I'm going to have to think about that for a moment because there are terms within it, but then there is a term.
Which is a timely thing.
Correct.
Yes.
So, well, then I have a hard time understanding that.
Well, that's why she's thinking about it.
Yeah, you think about it. But because if you look at the rest of it, it's for if you look at 7M, it's for failure to fill the terms of a conditional admission. If you look at 7, it's the fulfill the terms of a conditional agreement. So I don't care, but I think that there may be a question of
There would be no objection to changing it to terms plural.
Of course, because otherwise that's the only thing we're talking about, which is not. And I have to think about 12, Ms. Rothstein, as to whether that subsection 12, whether there you had suspended again. So
right,
that
would come out, she said.
Out.
Yep.
Well, we're talking about three suspended, 7M, 9H, and 12. And there again, you have terms plural. So I have to think about whether this makes sense to me.
Yes, and I think that the notion behind the suspension was to give the court the broad authority, if it wished to have it, to impose a suspension as opposed to a revocation. Now, I don't think that the board or I have any objection to the court changing it and simply deleting the term suspension and leaving it at revocation.
You have suspended, I'm sorry, this is a problem when we do it on the bench, but 7M has suspended too. We have to look at that.
Yes.
And I have another question about 7M.
Yes.
I looked at, I think it's Minnesota that we have in our binder, or maybe it's the Model Act of
we
the
have
ADA.
Both.
We have both, and we have Illinois, but I think I got this from Minnesota, which is under tab 10. And it says in I in Minnesota that any complaint for violation of the consent agreement filed with OLPR shall set forth the basis for finding that a term or terms of the consent agreement have been violated. And I'm assuming, but it doesn't say that here, that when you file a motion requesting the court to order revocation or suspension, but we'll have to look at that, that you're going to state the grounds.
Correct. I have, and I will continue to do that.
Yes, I know you have, and
but you're correct. It is not identified that way in the in the petition.
But it is, and maybe as a comfort to the lawyers that they'll be given appropriate notice. I don't know if you want to add something or not. I didn't try to draft something in there like Minnesota, but it did bother me because unless they give a notice as to what the objection is in writing, and the court's given that notice, there's a problem.
They are given notice under 7M. They will be allowed to file a response to the motion that the BBE files. They're going to be given a 20-day opportunity to file.
But you can't respond unless the grounds are set forth. That's what I'm saying. But anyway, that's what you've been doing, and I'm not so sure I would propose putting it in, but it bothers me.
Yeah. Well, the movement has the obligation to show on the face of the motion why the court should grant it, so you've been doing that for us and laying it out. So.
Yes, and as I said, we will certainly continue that practice.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else who has come to appear on the matter of conditional admission, petition 16-03? If not, then we will conclude this hearing, and the court will take up its work in open conference at 2 o'clock. We are adjourned.